não se varre com vassoura. Se varre com ponta de faca, meu Deus, bala de metralhadora. Nesse mundo de meu Deus, não é de Deus nem do diabo.
Não é de Deus, não é de Deus, não é de Deus nem do diabo. Não é de Deus, não é de Deus, não é de Deus nem do diabo.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. Oil prices today cracked $110 a barrel. Thing is, we are using less, and while that ought to help bring prices down, the problem is the weakness in the dollar, says John Kilduff at MF Global.
Oil prices are going to continue to soar unless and until the dollar turns itself around.
I'm Peter Mayer in Washington. $3.50 a gallon gasoline by May and June. That's the government's projection for average regular grade prices. Pump prices are already higher than that in parts of the West Coast. The Energy Department says prices could cross the $4 a gallon marker in some regions or some stations later this spring. Those levels are already seen in parts of California. Nationwide, gasoline prices are the highest in history, with diesel fuel and residential home heating oil prices at record levels.
On Wall Street today, the Dow was down 46 points. NASDAQ was off almost 12. The S&P also down almost 12 points. Southwest Airlines grounded 43 of its 737s today, pending their speedy inspections because, well, they hadn't been done, because FAA people let them slide on it, and an internal audit at Southwest turned it up. Mary Schiavo, former Transportation Department Inspector General, says each inspection will take a little time.
It does take about 6 hours. And those 6 hours on a schedule like Southwest, which prides itself on a 20-minute turn on its airplane, means that the plane has to go out of service.
Caused the cancellation of about 8% of the airline's flights today. Not what a small plane pilot ever wants to see, who has inadvertently trespassed on the invisible umbrella around the Capitol in Washington. F-16s on the wingtip. It was a single-engine Cessna turned smartly and got out when the Falcons showed up. There's one arrest and one fugitive in the killing of the student body president at the University of North Carolina, Eve Carson.
The two suspects are aged 17 and 21. Chapel Hill Mayor Kevin Foy says the community is struggling to heal.
We also still must offer comfort to a family in mourning. To Eve's family.
The 22-year-old from Athens, Georgia, was found shot to death on a street near campus. Police believe it was a random act of violence. Jim Crisula, CBS News.
The governor of the state of New York resigned today in embarrassment over the federal investigation into high-priced prostitutes and the money trail he allegedly left. Elliot Spitzer.
From those to whom much is given, much is expected. I have been given much. The love of my family, the faith and trust of the people of New York.
His resignation is effective on Monday. He'll be succeeded by his lieutenant governor, fellow Democrat David Patterson, who will make history in his own right as New York's first black governor. It's a kind of good news about prostate cancer. Cancer specialists are saying if men make it to their 70s before early stage prostate cancer is found, it's safe to watch and wait before choosing any treatment. Because, they say, most prostate cancers grow so slowly, you'll probably die of something else first. This is CBS News.
Well, I was shopping for a new car. Which one's me? A cool convertible or an SUV? Too bad I didn't know my credit was whack, because now I'm driving off the lot in a used subcompact FREE. That spells free. CreditReport.com, baby. Saw their ads on my TV. Thought about going but was too lazy. Now instead of looking fly and rolling fat, my legs are sticking to the vinyl and my posse's getting laughed at. FREE. That spells free. CreditReport.com, baby.
Offer applies with enrollment and Triple Advantage.
Hey, this is Michael Walter, here to let you know the Napa Hat Swap is back and going on now at participating Napa Auto Parts stores. Take one of your old hats into a Napa store near you and get a 2008 Napa racing hat free with any purchase. You'll end up with a great part and a great hat that's perfect for whatever the weekend has in store, whether you're watching my car or working on yours. The Hat Swap going on now at Napa. Limit one per customer. Good only while supplies last. Napa, get the good stuff.
Get the good stuff!
British researchers are saying don't blame your weight on your mom, even if she was too heavy when she bore you. For the most part, the word is we get chunky because, just like you thought, we eat too much and exercise too little. Up and at 'em at the Space Shuttle Endeavour for the crew.
Blue Oyster Cult, the wake-up call late this afternoon for the Endeavour crew and Japanese astronaut Takao Doi, is accompanying the first piece of Japan's Kibo lab to the International Space Station.
We are very happy to hear Godzilla. We are ready to go. And we'll have a great time today.
Endeavor's closing in on the station with docking planned for late tonight and the first of five spacewalks tomorrow. Peter King, CBS News.
Biggest crab cake ever in Delaware or anywhere else. Guinness Record Book people have certified the 235-pound crab cake created in October of 06 at the Diamond State Barbecue Championship in Dover. It took 9 hours to cook it, and it made 600 crab sandwiches. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Is Progressive.com an auto insurance utopia? Well, it can save you hundreds by being the one-stop place to compare Progressive's rates to those of other top companies. What's more, if you have any questions, we offer live phone support 24/7. And if you'd like to picture us with soap opera good looks, then go right ahead. What else would you expect in Utopia? Start saving today at Progressive.com or call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. That's Progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, Smithfield Village, Ohio. Prices vary based on how you buy. Comparison rates available in most states and situations.
A wine is only as good as the vineyards it comes from. For Cabot, America's favorite Pinot Grigio, that means grapes grown in northern Italy, where Cabot gets its light, crisp taste. Not surprisingly, Cabot's distinctive Pinot Noir is also America's favorite. So when you're looking for a truly exceptional wine, white or red, Cabot is the perfect choice.
The number one Italian wine in America, the Cabot Collection, elevating life. Try Cabot Riesling, the luscious, flavorful addition to the Cabot Collection. Imported by Palm Bay International, Boca Raton, Florida.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to Peter B.'s America, where Trent Lott is required to take his lobbyist friends to lunch at McDonald's. Yeah, we're going to kick off the show talking about ethics in Congress. Democrat Michael Capuano of the House of Representatives will join us here in just a moment. Later this hour, Lawrence J. Korb, Larry Korb from the Center for American Progress. He served as an undersecretary at the Pentagon during the Reagan administration. And we're going to talk about the resignation of Admiral William Fallon as the CENTCOM commander and what it means about our posture toward Iran. Also on today's program, did you know that some teachers are required to take a loyalty oath to keep their jobs? Well, Mary Ann Kearney Brown is a Quaker who teaches at California State University, East Bay. And she was fired recently for refusing to sign a loyalty oath as printed. She modified it to fit her religious beliefs. And fortunately, she's been rehired, so the story has a happy ending. But we're going to call attention to the number of jobs that require you to sign a loyalty oath of some kind. Also on today's program, Larissa Alexandrovna from Raw Story returns to update us on the case of Don Siegelman, former Democratic governor of Alabama, who is still behind bars. There's a little progress. His transcripts may be available soon so he can forge ahead with an appeal. Also on today's program, Eric Bullard from Media Matters for America. He's defending Hillary Clinton's response to that question about whether Barack Obama is a Muslim. And we'll talk about that as we kick off the free speech zone later on the program. And joining me now, Representative Michael Capuano. He is a Democrat, and he's got an interesting situation. He graduated from Boston College. That's where he got his law degree. And he represents Cambridge, which includes Harvard and MIT. Congressman, welcome to our program today.
Happy to be here.
Nice to talk with you. And is there a little culture clash there coming out of a Jesuit institution and rubbing up against all that ivy?
Not at the moment. It seems to have worked out okay.
Well, I was checking your stats. You were reelected with a 91% margin, so somebody loves you there.
Just enough.
But that puts you in a position as the holder of a safe seat for a very delicate assignment that the Speaker gave you, to try to deal with the ethics problems in the House and the very real lockdown or stalemate that has been present in the House Ethics Committee, really, for the last 7 years. And yesterday, you succeeded in passing legislation. The vote on a procedural move almost killed it, but in the end, it passed 229 to 182. Tell me what you think about this package that you passed.
It's obviously from the vote you can tell it was very controversial and very difficult to pass, very difficult to craft something that could get a majority of votes on the floor of the House, yet still maintain the confidence of outside neutral observers who follow the process and want to improve the process. And we were able to do that. This particular proposal, for the first time in the history of the country, will engage non-members in the ethics process as we review the actions of our own colleagues.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about the opposition you encountered, because there are many of your colleagues who believe that the only people who should police the ethics of the members of the House are members of the House.
And that's understandable. I mean, there are some constitutional arguments. I don't accept them because we didn't. It's one of the reasons we didn't empower this particular entity with certain powers. I mean, there are some things that the Constitution prohibits. At the same time, I think it's 25 or a little bit more than 25 states have similar entities. They have independent commissions that review the ethics alleged ethics violations of state legislators, and it's very similar. I'll tell you, honestly, I come from Massachusetts, and there we have an independent ethics commission. And I can only tell you that it's very difficult. Most people who want to run for a legislative office, we're not running to be judges or district attorneys or prosecutors. We have different drives. And it's very difficult to work with somebody on a regular basis to say stop a war or change a tax policy or whatever it might be, and then to go ahead and try to judge them, never mind file a complaint against them, on an ethics issue. It's something that's very difficult to do in human nature, not political and non-political. It's just human nature.
Mm-hmm. Well, Congressman, if you could, let me offer you a hypothetical example, and could you walk us through the process that will occur under your legislation?
Sure.
So, for example, I think it has been disgraceful that the House has barely, the House Ethics Committee, has barely dealt with any of the cases revolving around Jack Abramoff. And so let's imagine 2 years forward from now, there's a new lobbyist who comes to town and he greases members and they do favors for him. How will your ethics panel, this outside ethics panel, respond to allegations of that nature? And how will it be different from the current process?
Well, I have a hard time accepting the fact that the ethics committee may or may not have done something. The problem is we don't know. They might have done certain things. We just don't know it, and I would argue the transparency or lack thereof is the main problem. People, including members, we can't have confidence that anybody is reviewing a matter, and whether they are or not, we just don't know. So this particular process, in particular, will provide transparency. Now, it's not transparency up front, mm-hmm. because there is, I think, a legitimate concern about partisan witch hunts against certain members, especially during election time. I think that there are certain prurient interests that people might have relative to anybody in the public eye. And so there was an attempt to balance the concern about those, you know, partisan witch hunts and prurient interests versus the concern about we don't want people to not review allegations. And so in this particular situation, they have a certain amount of time, but after a certain period of time, there must be a public commentary made. And that it doesn't mean that there's a particular conclusion that's made. It doesn't even necessarily mean that the investigation is over. It just will let people know that whether we are or we are not investigating a certain member. And again, it won't be everything that everybody wants. And a lot of people, including myself, may or may not disagree with a certain outcome on a given case. But I do that now with the Supreme Court.
Well, let me follow up with this specific. Robert Ney is now behind bars. He served as a Republican member from Ohio. He was caught up in the Abramoff scandal. To my knowledge, the House Ethics Committee never even looked at his case. Is there something that may have gone on behind closed doors that wasn't disclosed to the public?
I don't know. The answer is it might have. And particularly in a circumstance like that, that was a criminal violation.
Mm-hmm.
And for all I know, the Ethics Committee might have, and it happens all the time, when one investigative entity steps aside at the request of another one, in this case, the Justice Department. Now, but I don't even know whether they did that. And I would argue that some people may not like it, but I think it's a valid thing on occasion for the Ethics Committee to say we have postponed our own investigation at the request of the Justice Department so as to not interfere with a criminal investigation.
All right, Duke Cunningham was indicted, and, you know, there was plenty of time before the case came to trial, but the Ethics Committee, to my knowledge, made no effort to delve into matters that were clearly on the public record.
I agree with you, and that's part of the problem. And again, I think it would have been, it is a legitimate answer. Again, I may not agree on a particular case, but it's a legitimate answer. Even if they had simply gotten up and said, look, we've started this investigation, but the Justice Department thought that it was better that they do it because they don't want to jeopardize witnesses or whatever it might be, and we have postponed it. At least you know that they've looked at it and that they have intentionally decided to, in that particular case, step aside, if they did. And for all I know, they might have done that, but there was no public announcement of it. And you know, sometimes they should, sometimes they shouldn't. And again, I understand fully well. I mean, right now, I draw the analogy to the judicial system all the time. I would defend the judicial system vigorously. I believe in it. I think it works reasonably well. It doesn't mean it works perfectly well every time, and it certainly doesn't mean that I agree that with the decisions of the Supreme Court. But at least the process is fair and open, and we can have a fair judgment that that somebody independent is making a determination. We can't do that in the ethics process, and that will be cured by this action that we took yesterday.
We're talking with Congressman Michael Capuano. He is a Democrat from Massachusetts and chaired the committee that put together this ethics reform package that did pass in the House yesterday. Congressman, one of the detractors of your bill says, well, there is no mechanism for outside referrals. We basically have created a new window for the Ethics Committee in one of those lovely hallways in the Cannon Office Building. But it goes to the same place, because if outsiders cannot make referrals to your screening panel, your ethics screening panel, if I can characterize it that way, really what difference is there if it goes to a dead end ultimately, or if, you know, responsible outsiders are not permitted to refer complaints?
Well, we had a proposal that we floated back in June on that very matter, but everybody thinks that the political system is just somehow pristine. And the problem is, I mean, people have to remember the Swift voters. It is one thing to have Mrs. Jones make an allegation against me to say that I think Mike Capuano did this thing badly. He was unethical on this issue. That's fine. That's fair. And I would argue that's okay. But what happens when the XYZ organization files? I think it's fair to know who funded them. Who are they? Because if I go back to tell my constituents that it's an extreme right-wing Republican-funded organization, right there, right at the beginning, my constituents will have a pretty good idea that if I say, hey, this is baseless, it's just a partisan witch hunt on the behalf of Karl Rove, it doesn't mean that I won't have to go to the process. It just means up front, my constituents are more likely to give me the benefit of the doubt while I clear my name. And one of the proposals we had is if somebody were to file a complaint, that they would have to disclose their funders. Who funded you? Did Karl Rove, you know, raise the money and just create this organization that never existed before, the Get Mike Capuano organization? And it didn't stop them. It simply said, if you're gonna have open filings, it's only fair to know who is really making this complaint so that my constituents can know whether it's a legitimate one or a politically motivated one.
Mm-hmm.
And bottom line is that particular proposal got everybody screaming. Nobody liked it, and we backed off from it. And we went back to the drawing board and tried to rework it. There are still some people who don't like the aspect that there are public filings, but there are public filings in the Senate, and that's it. There's no follow-up to it. We thought the more important thing was to not have witch hunts, not to allow the open door to have witch hunts, but to give the process a chance to let people know what is happening. The transparency, to me, is the most important thing, so that the public will know whether we are or are not doing our job.
Well, I think transparency is ultimately very important. I will agree with you there, Congressman. But we have seen that members are loath to turn other members in.
Which is why we have an independent entity doing this. Members do not have to make this complaint. And I will tell you that though that's not an official complaint, everybody fully expects that this entity, this board that we've created, the Office of Congressional Ethics,
mm-hmm.
will get most of their information through news articles or documents that are dropped off to them. It may not be an accepted official complaint, but that's where they're going to get it. I mean, I don't expect these people to be going out crawling around the city, you know, investigating unknown allegations. But I do expect that if some legitimate organization, Common Cause, whoever it might be, comes up and says, here's a 45-page dossier on Mike Capuano, and we think that there's some ethical concerns here and you should look at it, I fully expect that they will. And
well,
we'll know quickly whether they do or they don't, and I think that'll be the test.
All right, but in my experience, and we feature a weekly segment with Crew, you're familiar with their work,
sure.
And they have made numerous complaints and referrals that have dead-ended right there at the House Ethics Committee. Now, I'm hoping that your new Office of Congressional Ethics will be more responsive and will take a look at those, but there is nothing required in the statute. Congressman?
No, there is something required here. If they will know within 90 days, I think usually 90 days, sometimes a little longer, whether something has been looked at or not. They may not like the result, but they will know.
We'll pick up after the break here. Congressman Michael Capuano is our guest from Massachusetts, a Democrat. If you have a question or comment, call us now, toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. More straight ahead on the Peter B. Collins Show.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop. Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Hi, I'm John.
And I'm John.
And we're from All Class Transportation, where we take you to your special event in style, comfort, and safety. All Class Transportation is a truly professional local luxury transportation company with over 25 years of combined managerial service, an efficient, proactive staff, trained, certified chauffeurs, and a fleet of well-maintained luxury vehicles. We are well-suited to meet and exceed your specific needs.
All Class Transportation specializes in personalized luxury transportation, including company parties, corporate events, weddings, quinceañeras, whatever your needs, call All Class Transportation at 831-582-9338. That's 582-9338. Want to know about our rates? At All Class Transportation, our service and rates are second to none, period. We are All Class Transportation, TCP 22978A. Call us at 831-582-9338. That's 582-9338.
Go ahead, take a deep breath. Yeah, there's nothing like that new car insurance smell.
I love it.
Want to take it for a test drive?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be great if you could test drive car insurance? Well, maybe you can.
Notice all the impressive standard features. Good neighbor service for extra comfort and stability. And look how great it handles around those hairpin turns in your budget.
Check out the company 40 million other drivers trust, State Farm. No one gives more discounts to more drivers, and nobody takes care of you like a State Farm agent.
Who's that?
That's your built-in security system, your very own State Farm agent.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hey there, and who are those guys?
Oh, that's your award-winning claims department.
Wow.
So talk to a State Farm agent today and kick the tires on our car insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
I'm Justin Hambly, your Monterey Bay State Farm agent. Call me today at 831-688-3683. That's 688-3683.
And we continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. We're talking about ethics in Congress.
This station presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today, we salute you, Mr. Closeted Conservative Congressman.
Mr. Closeted Conservative Congressman.
Most people go to the airport bathroom to relieve themselves before their next flight. But not you. No. You're looking to become a member of the Ground Level Club.
Not what they mean by a layover.
You, Mr. Closeted Conservative Congressman, voted against gay marriage. That's because you want to have as many partners as you can, in as many cans as you can.
We continue now with Congressman Michael Capuano. His bill passed in the House yesterday, imposing a new layer of ethics enforcement. It's called the Office of Congressional Ethics. And, Congressman, that spoof commercial might hurt your feelings. I hope not. But
I'm sorry I didn't hear from you.
Oh, okay. It was Mr. Closeted Conservative Gay Congressman, and it's a spoof spot about Larry Craig. And, of course, he's in the other House. I'm not holding you responsible for disciplining him. But it's another case where, you know, he received a slap on the wrist from the Senate Ethics Committee. And the perception out there is that these are two clubs run by and for the members, impervious to really outside influence and enforcement. And I do believe that your bill is an important step in the right direction. But one of my other issues, besides not permitting direct outside referrals, is that it has no subpoena power. So that this new Office of Congressional Ethics really is a screening panel for the existing ethics process, is it not?
No, I don't believe that at all. I mean, if subpoena power right now, the Congress of the United States is involved with subpoenas that have issued to the President of the United States' administration, and it's been months dragging on. If the minute you give the any entity subpoena power, you're automatically guaranteed a regular basis in court challenging those subpoenas that could take years, if not months. And we thought that since the Ethics Committee itself has subpoena power, and since the Ethics Committee itself still is the only entity that is legally allowed, constitutionally allowed, to render judgment on fellow on their colleagues, that all you're doing is adding an extra layer to absolutely guarantee delay of important reviews of different matters. And we thought that since transparency is important, part of transparency is timely transparency, not just transparency 40 years later. Oh, by the way, 40 years ago we looked at this case.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to ensure timely transparency, we thought that the threat of a subpoena, which will occur at the ethics level when it gets there, if it gets there, we thought was sufficient. And again, we were fortunate enough to be able to garner the support of almost every group that reviewed this, not every one of them, but almost every group, knowing full well that they would rather, you know, everybody likes to have something exactly the way they like it, and we all know that, but in the legislative process, as you noted, we won with one vote.
Right.
Had we had subpoena power in there, I will guarantee you, well, I guess I can't guarantee you, but I feel comfortable saying that it is unlikely we would have won, and some progress is better than none.
Dave in Eureka has got a comment. Go ahead, Dave. You're on the air with Congressman Capuano.
Hey, Peter. And Congressman, I think I heard you correctly, but please correct me if I'm wrong. A little while ago you said, I have complete faith in our Justice Department to do the right thing, which
I didn't say complete faith.
Haven't taken a real close look at the last several attorney generals.
No. I didn't say complete faith. I have faith in the justice system. I know we have problems. Believe me, I've taken a close look at the Justice Department. That's why I voted against the Patriot Act every time it's come up or in any form on the floor, and I will continue to do so.
Dave, thanks for your question. And, Congressman, just about 30 seconds remaining. You sit on the Administration Committee, which recently rejected the electoral challenge presented by Christine Jennings from Florida. 18,000 votes disappeared on electronic voting machines. Are you comfortable with that rejection?
Oh, God, no. That's why I pushed very hard this year for paper ballots. I think that we couldn't prove that there was fraud, and I think the burden is on us to prove it. The bottom line is the machines were not paper machines. They were electronic machines.
Right.
It is exactly why, as far as I'm concerned, that's why I voted against the last so-called election reform, because it did not require paper ballots. And I think we'll be back at this until we do.
Congressman Capuano from Massachusetts, a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Peter.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood Files, sponsored in part by Emerson. Whatever the demand, whatever the challenge, with Emerson, you can consider it solved. And by the makers of naturally derived Emile BP. clinically shown to maintain healthy blood pressure. I'm Charles Osgood. When Dutch geologist Kenneth Reichtag went to Mauritius, someone gave him a roughly drawn map.
The map resembled very much like a treasure map. It had a road on it and a few palms, really, and a few crosses indicating the location.
What he found there was not a treasure, but something quite unexpected. The story after this. Qatar's 25 trillion cubic meters of natural gas could be the clean-burning answer to the world's energy needs. But Qatar Gas still has to get it to the world, and that's why businesses turn to Emerson. Emerson accurately predicts what world trends mean for them, so that Emerson can supply the cutting-edge technologies that enable Qatar Gas to precisely control four of the largest natural gas production facilities ever built. Emerson anticipates customer needs, so when they're ready, Emerson's ready. Emerson, consider it solved. Over 70 million Americans deal with pre-hypertension. But let me tell you about a wonderful new product, Amil BP. It makes maintaining healthy blood pressure easy. Take it every day the way you take your vitamins. Amil BP uses a patented, naturally derived ingredient called Amil Peptide, clinically shown to help maintain a healthy blood pressure. Keep yours in a healthy range by eating right, exercising, and taking Amil BP. Available at Walgreens and CVS, or visit AmilBP.com to find other fine retailers near you. Geologist Kenneth Reichtag went to Mauritius a while back to study the landscape. But instead, he and a colleague went to a site on a hand-drawn map they got from the owner of a sugar plantation.
We were digging there for 2 hours, and then our colleague came by. He looked at what we collected, and he was completely stunned. He said, "These are all dodo bones. How is it possible?"
The dodo bird went extinct 300 years ago. A fire destroyed the last stuffed dodo in 1755. They just couldn't get over the find. Dozens of bones from a bird which left scientists with nothing left to study.
It's hard to imagine that they are bird bones. But when we found this beak, which is about 3-4 inches tall, we were really convinced. I was emotionally touched.
The bones were found with hundreds of plant and animal fossils, all evidence of the ecotope, or environment, the dodo lived in.
This is the very first time ever that all this material is found together. And you need that information if you also want to assess how vulnerable that ecotope was to a human impact.
Nobody really knows for sure how the dodo went so famously extinct. Now they may find the answer. The Osgood File. I'm Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, authentic, inexpensive Chinese food prepared to order every day. Make this the year you become personally acquainted with the May family and Jim's Restaurant at 1584 Del Monte in Seaside. Jim's specials are still $5.75 for lunch and $6.50 for dinner per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget, Jim's is tops for takeout and catering too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following The Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after The Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Yeah, Katrina hates this one. Hold your ears,
bom,
Katrina. I keep threatening to retire this song, and my wonderful producer Katrina hates it. I once promised to stop playing it if I got 10 emails, but I've only gotten 7. And underlying is no laughing matter. With the resignation, the early retirement of Admiral William Fallon as the CENTCOM commander, some argue, including the author of a recent piece in Esquire magazine, which appears to be the precipitating event in the retirement of Admiral Fallon, it's argued that he is or was the last brass standing between the White House and an attack on Iran. For commentary, we go to Lawrence J. Korb, a veteran who served in the Reagan administration as Assistant Secretary of Defense, and he is now a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. Larry Korb, welcome back to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Nice to be back with you, Peter.
Nice to talk with you again, sir. And I note the high-resolution portrait that is available on the website at AmericanProgress.org if people would like to get a gander at Larry Korb. Your quick reaction, Admiral Fallon, was he pushed or did he jump?
Well, he was pushed. The White House did not like the fact that he not only disagreed with them about Iran, but he also did not like the fact that they wanted to stop, you know, the withdrawal of troops from Iraq and haven't sent enough troops to Afghanistan.
And he's no General Petraeus, is he?
No, he's not. And, you know, the great irony, it's a very interesting thing if you think about it. Back in 2004, General Petraeus wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post saying how good things were going in Iraq and how, you know, training was going right before the presidential election, which, you know, was a violation of every, you know, norm that military people have. And, of course, what he got, he gets promoted. Here's Fallon, who, you know, lets a reporter know. And people knew these things even before Esquire came out. And, you know, he gets booted out. And so that, I think, sends the wrong signal to the country and to a lot of young military officers.
Well, we also have high turnover at the very top. And this cannot be good for morale. It could not be good for continuity of leadership. And I think it sends a confusing set of signals to our adversaries.
Well, it sure does. I mean, Fallon was picked by Gates because he wanted someone who had a broad strategic view, and Admiral Fallon had showed that out in the Pacific when he was the head of the Pacific Command. He wanted somebody to come in and take an objective view from a military point of view of the whole situation with Iran, Afghanistan, who didn't have a vested interest because, you know, many of the Army and Marine generals who normally would have taken over Central Command have been part of the whole operation. It would be hard for them to, understandably hard for them to be objective.
And just a quick count, is he the fourth CENTCOM commander since we invaded Iraq 5 years ago?
Well, you had Frank Sabizay, Fallon, and now you will have a fourth, you know, assuming, I don't know how long it'll take to pick one, but yeah, it would. And here to me, you know, there again, I think was a terrible mistake to let Franks retire. I mean, he started the war, he should have been finished, and we now know from Doug Feith's new book that's coming out that Franks didn't even want to hear about, you know, what happened after they got rid of Saddam, you know, Hussein. So, yeah, that was wrong to let him go. General Sabizay, I think, did a terrific job. And they extended him a couple of months before, Gates came in, and then he wanted his own person.
Mm-hmm. And let's focus for a couple of minutes here about the U.S. posture toward Iran, because it is a bit confusing. We know that based on the 2003 National Intelligence Estimate that going forward, we heard very bellicose commentary from Bush, Cheney, and a few others, right up through the fall of last year, of 2007. Then the updated NIE comes out based on intelligence that was collected, we believe, starting in 2005, a stolen laptop and apparently a defector.
Mm-hmm.
And so it took almost 2 years for the information to percolate up and for the White House to basically be leveraged into accepting it, getting past its denial and its bellicose talk based on the old NIE. So the one that was finally released to the American public in early December of 2007 says that we believe that since 2005, Iran has suspended its efforts to develop a nuclear weapon. Now, based on that, a lot of us heaved a sigh of relief and said, well, this seals it. They cannot launch some military assault on Iran, given that the big reason that had been offered for this very aggressive posture has now been taken out of the picture. Now, we've heard the president and the vice president quibble with the NIE, and some others have attacked it as well. But how can we now be talking about some sort of military action against Iran when we don't have current proof of a nuclear capability or an imminent development of such a capability?
Well, you shouldn't be, but remember, these are people who went to Iraq, you know, without real proof that they had weapons of mass destruction or ties to al-Qaeda. And what they've done is they've emphasized that part of the NIE, the National Intelligence Estimate, that says they're continuing to enrich uranium. But the NIE was very clear they're not, you know, weaponizing, you know, this nuclear material.
And so on what basis would Dick Cheney or others argue that we have an imminent need to attack Iran before January of 2009?
Well, they would argue that by continuing to enrich uranium, then it makes it easier. They can move more quickly toward getting a weapon, a nuclear weapon. And you probably know that since the NIE came out, Admiral McConnell, the director of national intelligence, was dragged up to, you know, to the Hill and more or less, you know, had to say he wasn't, you know, 100% sure, or, you know, the report was not the way it was written, might not have been the best way. But the fact of the matter is that you had 16 intelligence agencies concur on that, and Admiral McConnell really had no choice but to let it go. In fact, the administration didn't want it to come out. But so many of the professionals in the intelligence community have been burned on Iraq, were determined that it was going to get out one way or the other, so they finally did let a sanitized version come out.
And I'm grateful to them for that.
Yes, yes, we should be.
So then how would you advise me and my listeners, what should we be paying attention to in terms of signals from the Bush administration, buildups in the Persian Gulf, et cetera? And number two, what do you see as strategies to contain or prevent this aggressive desire by Bush and Cheney?
Well, the great irony is they got Fallon out because they didn't like, you know, particularly what he said in that Esquire article. But paradoxically, they made it even more difficult for themselves to go and take military action against Iran because it's inflamed the whole country. I mean, I have had in the last 2 days something like 15 interviews on radio all over the country. And, you know, this has become a very, very big story. And then people are saying, wait a second, like you said, the NIE says no, your military commander says no. I think it, in fact, probably makes it virtually impossible for the president to take military action in the short time he has before he leaves office.
Now, we've learned with this administration that just because you get past one bad actor, and let me switch departments here and talk about Alberto Gonzalez, that he can be replaced by somebody who is about the same or even worse. And depending on what issue you want to judge the new attorney general on, in some cases he's more effective at stonewalling than Gonzalez was. So what can we expect in terms of a replacement for Admiral Fallon? And will this individual have what I would consider to be the same balanced view that Fallon has?
Well, I think the Senate will be very careful about who they confirm. General Dempsey is going to be the acting head of CENTCOM for a while. But, you know, that man or woman officer that goes up, I think, is going to be subject to very thorough scrutiny by the Congress. I think you'll also see Admiral Fallon testify as well before they confirm the next commander, because they're interested in his views not only about Iran, but also about Iraq.
Isn't that kind of unusual for a departing commander to testify?
Well, I mean, the Congress can ask him, and, you know, it'll be very hard for him to refuse it. But normally when somebody of his stature and his reputation is forced out, the Congress, I think, will want to know why. I mean, this was not like with General Abizaid. He had served more than, you know, his full tour, so that was, you know, different. General Abizaid, by the way, has testified since he left, and basically he told the Congress that, you know, even if Iran gets a nuclear weapon, it's not the end of the world. You know, we can contain them.
Well, and I agree with that position. I mean, it's not desirable.
No,
but
no.
We currently live with, some 20-plus nations that either have the capability, at least they've enriched uranium, and some of those have developed weapons.
Well, that's true. I mean, we're living with North Korea. Remember the president said we won't let North Korea get nuclear weapons?
Mm-hmm.
Refused to talk to them. Guess what? They got them. They even tested.
Lawrence J. Korb is our guest, senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. He's with us till the top of the hour. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call now, toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. John in Carmel Valley, welcome to the program.
I just want to make a point I've made before. It just seems insane that we have to deal with this issue. I know we all hoped it was gone over the hill, one good thing among so many that aren't, but now it's back. And I just want to say this, it's not going to go over well with some people, but, and it may sound anti-Semitic, and I am not anti-Semitic, but I am convinced by the evidence I've heard and seen that the biggest proponents, maybe bigger than Bush and Cheney, are the Israelis. They want us to attack Iran, and when Bush went to the Middle East recently, I don't doubt they leaned on him. The Israelis did, for all it was worth, to attack or do something militarily about Iran. Am I wrong about this?
Larry, go ahead.
Well, John, I think you make a good point. You can disagree with Israel's foreign policy without being anti-Semitic. In fact,
yeah, but you can't with a lot of people, unfortunately.
If you go to Israel, there's an awful lot of disagreement with a lot of their policies, and I think we've got to put that behind us. There's no doubt that Israel, being in the same neighborhood, is concerned about what's happening in Iran, and obviously they would prefer them not to have a nuclear weapon. But I think if you take a look at the situation, if we were to attack Iran, they could make life miserable not only for us but for Israel in the area.
But they don't see it in that light.
Well, some don't. And again, there are a lot of people don't agree with Bush's foreign policy either.
Excuse me. I know there are a fair number. I don't know how many. How many would you guess? Just throw out a figure of Israelis that would not be comfortable. Half the population.
Well, again, I think if you look at the newspapers and the journals, for example, the retired head of Mossad just wrote a book basically saying, this is not something you have to worry about. So, again, I don't know the exact numbers, but they're a vibrant democracy. There is disagreement just like there is in our democracy.
All right, John, thank you very much. I appreciate your call today, 888-5-PETER-B, if you'd like to talk with Larry Korb. We're going to take a break and return in just a moment. 888-573-8372. That's our toll-free number. Coming up next hour, did you know teachers are required to sign loyalty oaths in California? Marianne Kearney Brown refused, got fired, but she got her job back. She'll tell the story coming up next hour on the Peter B. Collins Show.
You know you move too fast. This is Barbara Mossberg inviting you to our poetry slowdown. We make the morning last, Sundays at noon, at KRXA First, bringing you a different kind of news in the most ancient forms of wisdom. This Sunday, we continue the poetry of trees and its impact on environmental and civil laws. What is up with trees and us? Do you have a poem you love about trees? This is your assignment, KRXA listeners who think for yourselves. Why is there a rest stop on the New Jersey Turnpike named for a poet who wrote 12 lines about trees? Is there a poem that's ever made a difference to you? Call into our show. Tell us what you're knowing. Share with our Poetry Slowdown listeners. We're making an on-air community of a different kind of news. We need as much as daily headlines for all our health. We'd love to hear from you. Join me at high noon Sunday, and together we'll make the morning last. Right here on KRXA 540 AM.
Does it seem like the service is lacking at most service stations? Not at Mid-Valley Valero and Shell on Carmel Valley Road. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell offer complete auto repair, smog inspections, major brand tires, 30, 60, and 90,000-mile service checks, complete brake work, and fix any electrical problems. They even provide environmentally friendly auto detailing. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell use only the highest quality original and aftermarket auto parts. Call Mid-Valley Valero and Shell at 831-624-0722. That's 624-0722. Remember, for all your automobile needs, only Mid-Valley Valero and Shell will do. Locally owned, Mid-Valley Valero and Shell. Putting the service back in service stations.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffeehouse in Soquel Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose-leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Rare frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive and Porter Street in Soquel.
How would you like to stop your taxes from paying for war? You can support the War Tax Option Act, which adds a checkbox to your tax form that stops your taxes from funding war. This frees up your tax money to pay for other vital programs that you care about. For more information, call 831-521-6042 or visit wartaxoption.org.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, brought to you by the Organic Wine Company. You love organic fruits and vegetables, so hey, wash it down with organic wine. Imported from France, many of the wines contain no sulfites. Log on to ecowine.com or call Veronique toll-free at 888-ECO-WINE. That's 888-ECOWINE. We continue with Lawrence J. Korb, Larry Korb, senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. Larry, we were talking about Iran's nuclear intentions a moment ago, but last week I was stunned to learn in this confrontation that was averted between Colombia, Venezuela, and Ecuador, the allegation that the FARC, that's the armed revolutionary group that's been in a civil war with the central government of Colombia for many years now, has somehow come into possession of a nuclear device. And this turned out to be a one-day story. I'd like to know a lot more about it. What have you been able to dig up?
Well, as far as I know, they haven't. But it does point up a problem that there's a lot of loose nuclear material around the world. And when the Soviet Union collapsed, or the Soviet Empire, I should say, collapsed, a lot of this material, a lot of it was not safeguarded. And you have a program called the Nunn-Lugar Bill that, you know, we try and buy up this stuff as well as keep these sciences gainfully employed. And that was just to the former Soviet states, and Senator Obama joined with Senator Lugar after Senator Nunn retired to spread it, you know, even outside the former Soviet Union. So there is a problem with a lot of loose nuclear material, and that's the greatest threat to the United States. Back in the 2004 campaign, both Kerry and Bush agreed that a nuclear weapon falling into the hands of a terrorist group would be the ultimate existential threat.
Then to clarify, your information is that FARC doesn't have...
No.
But the report indicated they were attempting, or...
Yeah, attempting. You know, I mean, and again, you know, you don't... I mean, a lot of times, you know, people talk and say, yeah, I think every terrorist group would like to have a nuclear weapon.
I mean, did they have a posting on eBay, or did they call Elliot Spitzer's hooker?
I don't know. I mean, you know, basically it could have been, you know, just some one of those people mouthing off, you know. I mean, a lot of loose talk down there, you know, and of course, you know, Chavez, no telling what he'll say.
Yeah. Last night I was watching the NewsHour on PBS, and we got Fred Kagan, for the war, and Nir Rosen, a very effective critic of our continuing occupation of Iraq. And they presented very different views. Kagan playing down the ethnic cleansing that has really isolated Shia from Sunni in many parts of Iraq.
And Nir Rosen pointing out that that's one of the contributing factors to the leveling off of violence. And the New York Times has a good graph in the paper today, which shows the spike of violence in 2007. And essentially, while Americans seem lulled into a sense that things are getting better in Iraq, we've really just been able to dial back to the overall level of violence that was present in 05, 06.
That's correct. And what happened, too, don't forget, when we started the surge and changed our strategy, the violence went up dramatically between January when the surge started and through the summer. So when you're comparing it to then, it looks better. And of course, we've seen this before. And I think Fred Kagan is one of the people who pushed the surge, and certainly the surge has had some impact. But I think, as Nir Rosen was talking about, there are a lot of other things that are, you know, having the impact. The fact is, you know, the Sunnis and Shias aren't killing each other because the neighborhoods have been ethnically cleansed. We're arming the Sunnis. I think if you remember that interview, you know, Nir Rosen was talking about the fact that whenever we leave,
You're
going to fight it out. And, You know, the Sadr, you know, he's just laying low till we leave, and we're arming and training the Sunnis. So, you know, it's going to be quite a Donnybrook.
Well, and Kagan act like these awakening councils are more parallel to the League of Women Voters.
Well, and what people forget, again, with these awakening councils, we were offered that deal back in 2004, and again in 2005, and then, you know, then National Security Advisor Rice wouldn't let the military do it. And, of course, we finally did that, and it certainly is good for our troops, as less of them being killed and less violence in Anbar province, but the central government's not happy about it, and so we're arming a group that doesn't support the government we're there to protect.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And also, we've got to reference that Sadr's folks, the Mahdi Army, have been on the sidelines, and that all of this suggests to me that whenever we leave, whether it's next year or, 100 years, as John McCain might suggest, they do have the patience to simply wait us out.
The
end game is probably going to be pretty much the same no matter when we trigger it.
Well, that's right. I mean, I think the only hope that you have in the interim is to set a date to leave and get the Iraqi government to, you know, do what they need to do, make the compromises, share power to stop this. Because if they don't, it doesn't matter how long you stay. And, of course, they're under no, you know, they'll, to keep us happy, they'll pass some law and then they'll veto it. And then, you know, if you read the fine print, it really doesn't say what they claim. And then they go on vacation.
Mm-hmm. Let me talk about Turkey for a moment, because it appears that that situation has defused itself a little bit. Turkey said it voluntarily withdrew its ground troops from northern Iraq. But it's a very uncomfortable situation, as I see it, Larry Korb, that unilaterally the Turks started to take action back around Christmas time, a real challenge not only to the Bush occupation of Iraq, but also to the puppet government there and their efforts to maintain a balance between the Kurds, the Sunnis, and the Shia.
Yeah.
Do you believe that Turkey has permanently withdrawn, or did they just tactically move back and they'll be back in Kurdistan in the near future?
Well, they'll be back unless the Iraqi government brings the PKK under control. And the Iraqi central government doesn't control the Kurdish area, and the Kurdish leaders don't want to bring this group under control because this is the group that's fighting for Kurdish independence and a separate Kurdish state. Remember, the Kurds are the largest ethnic group in the world. They have like 25 million of them that don't have their own state.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I know the history of repression in Turkey,
yeah,
and that's an issue that I think, again, that Rumsfeld and others misjudged in the invasion process, you know, imagining that we could keep Turkey contained, even though they clearly rejected our overtures to buy access with, what, $5 or $6 billion before we invaded.
That's right, and in fact, by not having that force come in, it made the situation after Saddam fell even worse.
Mm-hmm. Larry Korb, just about 30 seconds. What would you like to add that I haven't asked you about?
Well, I think the key thing is that the Fallon thing was unfair to him, but in the long run, I think it'll be good for the country because it's got us focused on what these people might do because, you know, a lot of times they'll say one thing and do another. If you see Doug Feit's new book, you know, he says they decided to go to war in December 2002, and the president kept saying, no, he hadn't.
Right. Well, and I hope that your wishful thinking is accurate, that the Senate will be tough on the in the confirmation process of Fallon's successor. Their track record on confirmations is very weak to date, sir.
Okay.
Thank you. Larry Korb, always a pleasure. Thanks
okay,
for joining me today.
Good to talk to you, Peter. Take
Larry
care.
Korb at the Center for American Progress. I'm Peter B. Collins.
We're talking with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. Veronique, you started the company more than 30 years ago, and was it partly because you were getting headaches from wine?
Absolutely. I'm an extremely chemically sensitive person. There were no wines, no conventionally grown wines that I could really drink and enjoy until I accidentally tasted my grandfather's wine and discovered to my extreme surprise that I could drink those wines without getting headaches. More and more people suffer the results of the accumulation of toxic substances in our environment, and our tolerance is getting really strained, and therefore it takes a very little amount of a toxic substance for them to start have an unpleasant experience.
Learn more about the Organic Wine Company on the web at ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. To place an order or ask a question, call 888-ECO-WINE. Toll free, that's 1-888-ECO-WINE. Tell them Peter B. sent you.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Elliot Spitzer admits to private failings.
I am resigning from the office of governor.
Crude oil at $110 a barrel.
Oil prices are going to continue to soar unless and until the dollar turns itself around.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. New York Governor Elliot Spitzer announced today that he'll step down next Monday, saying he always held others accountable for their conduct and can ask no less of himself.
In the past few days, I've begun to atone for my private failings with my wife, Soda, my children, and my entire family. The remorse I feel will always be with me.
Spitzer's wife was again at his side, a stricken look on her face. The man, once known as the Sheriff of Wall Street, could face criminal charges for trying to conceal his payments to a high-priced prostitution ring. And as a lawyer, CBS News correspondent Nancy Cordes says Spitzer should have known better because the government monitors unusual movements of money.
A troubling transaction might trigger a suspicious activity report. Banks send about a million of them to federal investigators every year. They've always had to report payments over $10,000, but since 9/11, banks have started looking harder at small amounts, searching for money laundering, bank fraud, and terrorist financing.
Every account holder is assigned a risk score, and government officials get high scores. They're known as PEPs, politically exposed persons. Spitzer reportedly spent tens of thousands of dollars on trysts with prostitutes, most famously on February 13th at the Mayflower Hotel in Washington. The New York Times identifies the young woman he met that night as 22-year-old Ashley Alexandra Dupre, an aspiring singer from New Jersey. Now this.
Welcome to Chapman's Cheeses.
Yes. What do you recommend today?
Well, there's a special on forgotten expenses and disorganized sales figures. But I highly recommend the lingering invoicing. Very well aged.
Is running your business getting in the way of running your business? That's why millions of businesses rely on QuickBooks software to easily deal with routine chores, like tracking sales, organizing expenses, and creating invoices, so you can get back to what you do best.
This is a cheese shop, isn't it?
Yeah.
QuickBooks. Get back to business. Start today at QuickBooks.com.
That bell means the stock floor is closed for the day. But at Forex.com, you can trade foreign currencies around the clock. At Forex.com, we give you the tools you need to expand your investment portfolio into the OTC foreign exchange market. Go to Forex.com to open your free practice account today and test your trading strategies risk-free. When you're ready, just click and trade 24 hours a day, 5 days a week. When the stock market's closed, Forex.com is open for business. Forex is an over-the-counter market and involves significant risk of loss.
Crude oil topped $110 a barrel in today's trading and settled just a bit lower at $109.92. Analyst John Kilduff sees no end to this price spiral. He says oil's more expensive because the U.S. dollar has less purchasing power.
It doesn't matter at all right now that there's plenty of crude oil on hand. And in fact, 15-year highs for gasoline supplies on hand. It all has to do with the falling dollar.
No question that the value of the dollar has affected the price of oil. But I'm convinced that it's supply and demand that's really creating the major portion of the rise.
President Bush was interviewed for the nightly business report on PBS. Where is gasoline going? Up. The Energy Department now forecasts that the average will peak near $3.50 a gallon in May and June. In Chapel Hill, North Carolina, a break in the murder case that's gotten national attention. CBS News correspondent Jim Krasula reports.
Chapel Hill police have charged two young men, aged 17 and 21, in connection with last week's fatal shooting of University of North Carolina student body president Eve Carson. Her body was found on a street a mile from campus. The 22-year-old from Athens, Georgia, was widely known and very popular at UNC.
Carson had been shot repeatedly in an apparent robbery. Her vehicle and her ATM card were stolen. Southwest Airlines, which admits failing to make required inspections for metal fatigue, grounded 43 of its planes today.
They are very serious inspections that apparently were skipped or delayed. They didn't really have a choice.
Mary Schiavo is a former inspector general of the Transportation Department. She says all that's required is a simple visual inspection for cracks, but Southwest didn't do it and the FAA didn't follow up.
In this case, because it was made public and such serious inspections, the FAA will be called on the carpet.
Southwest faces a civil penalty of more than $10 million and lost revenue. It's already canceled 139 flights today. Geraldine Ferraro has resigned from Hillary Clinton's campaign finance committee. The 1984 Democratic candidate for vice president has been under fire for saying that Barack Obama wouldn't be where he is if he was a white man. Obama says that's ridiculous and wrongheaded. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Well, I was shopping for a new car. Which one's me? A cool convertible or an SUV? Too bad I didn't know my credit was whack, because now I'm driving off the lot in a used subcompact FREE. That spells free. CreditReport.com, baby. Saw their ads on my TV. Thought about going, but was too lazy. Now instead of looking fly and rolling fat, my legs are sticking to the vinyl and my posse's getting laughed at. FREE. That spells free. CreditReport.com, baby.
Offer applies to enrollment and triple advantage.
Hey, this is Mike Walter, here to let you know the Napa Hat Swap is back and going on now at participating Napa Auto Parts stores. Take one of your old hats into a Napa store near you and get a 2008 Napa racing hat free with any purchase. You'll end up with a great part and a great hat that's perfect for whatever the weekend has in store, whether you're watching my car or working on yours. The Hat Swap going on now at Napa. Limit one per customer. Good only while supplies last. Napa, get the good stuff.
Get the good stuff!
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Later this hour, Larissa Alexandrovna returns with an update on the situation in Alabama, where Governor Don Siegelman, a former Democratic governor, is now behind bars. Karl Rove is at the center of a network that helped convict the former governor. Ah, but there's more.
Well, she was a
This half hour, we are joined by Marianne Kearney Brown. She is a math instructor at California State University East Bay, formerly known as Cal State Hayward. And she was recently fired because she inserted different language in the state loyalty oath that she is required to sign to be an employee of the state of California through the California State University system. Marianne, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show today.
Hi.
I want to tell you how stunned I was to learn from your experience that there even is any kind of loyalty oath required for a math teacher at the university level.
The funny thing is lots of people were stunned by it, including people who they themselves had signed the oath. It's just like, you know, people will get the stack of papers and just sign it. And, a lot of people are pretty surprised to find out this is true.
Now, Marianne, apparently you're the kind of person who reads the fine print because you've been signing these things but modifying them, it appears, for years. You were teaching in Sonoma. You taught at a high school in Vallejo.
Yes.
And apparently from time to time you've been required to sign a document of this sort. And because of your background as a Quaker, you refused to sign it as is.
Now, the first time I saw it was in Sonoma, and what I remember is being shocked and saying to the human resources person, you know, I'm a Quaker, and we really don't swear oaths. And she took the paper back, wrote Quaker, doesn't swear oaths, and put that in my file. And then in Vallejo, I would insert the word, I would cross out swear, circle the word affirm, and put nonviolently. And mm-hmm. there was never any problem.
Yeah, and I find this to be creepy and and fascist. And when you contrast a loyalty oath required for somebody to teach math with the oath of office that has been taken by a president and vice president, and in my opinion, violated, shredded in many ways, it really sets up this this comparison that I feel very uncomfortable with.
That was the exact thing this time. That's what went through my mind. I was thinking, the president probably signed this oath, and he's ignoring it. I mean, it's like people don't take it seriously. It's like a meaningless formality. And I thought, why should this be required of us when our leaders are not even taking it seriously? And it made it seem even more important this time to me than it has in the past.
Yeah. And his oath of office is very simple, that he swears to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States, so help me God.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that he has intentionally violated that oath on many levels. We know from the domestic spying conducted under the NSA that he intentionally broke the law there. I believe that he has operated outside the Constitution in terms of interrogation tactics, detention tactics, and the way that people have been handled in detention, including violations of the Geneva Conventions, which are, in fact, embraced by our Constitution. And by ratifying the Geneva Conventions, when the president violates his constitutional, when he violates the Geneva Conventions, he violates his constitutional oath. It's that simple.
And you know what else I was thinking was that when I was little, I learned that Congress declared war. And it doesn't seem like that anymore. It seems like Congress rubber stamps the president's decision to declare war. And that's not what I remember the Constitution to be at all.
Well, you make a very good point there. The Congress has abdicated its responsibility and allowed presidents of both parties to basically assert commander-in-chief powers without a declaration of war. And I believe that we've had a lot of problems related to that over the past three or four wars that we've been involved in. So, Marianne Kearney Brown, first of all, can you tell us a little bit about the oath itself and how many people in California are required to sign this?
Anybody who works for a public school system, you know, for a public school, is required to sign it. All state employees, so like the ladies at the DMV, all those people, and law enforcement, National Guard, and any politician, you know, anybody holding public office also has to sign the oath.
Now, why is it that Marianne Kearney Brown appears to be the only Californian who has stood up and said, I will not sign it in its form, and you even suffered being dismissed from your job over this?
Well, a lot of people do, people have told me that they do alter it, and, you know, whoever their human resources person is just rolls their eyes and files it anyway, and I've heard that a lot. And I've also, in my case, they hired me before they processed the paperwork, so I didn't even get I wasn't even presented with it until I was already teaching for 2 weeks. So that made a difference. I mean, the difference in my case was that I was already working and refused to sign it, so I was fired. But I've been hearing from people who were denied employment because because they wouldn't sign it. I just heard of a woman, and a Quaker in Southern California, who was denied employment at Cal State Fullerton because she refused to sign it. And something like that, oh, I didn't get a job, it doesn't make newspaper, but, oh, you know, this person gets fired in the middle of the quarter. That's something, you know, it interested one reporter who reported on it, and then it became a, you know, it got passed around and people heard about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it happens more. I mean, I think it happens. I've been looking online for just to find other stories. So if anybody, like if anybody's listening and was fired or did not receive employment because of a loyal field, I'd be really interested to hear about it.
Well, I want to open up the phone lines right now and encourage people to call because we have a lot of state and some federal employees who hear this program in Sacramento, on the Central Coast, and North State, too. So if you have had to sign a loyalty oath like this and you bristled at it but did it anyway, let us know. If you've refused to sign or you know someone who was not hired or who was discharged from a job for failing to sign a loyalty oath of this nature, give us a call. The number is toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B, 1-888-573-8372. And as always, if you find that confidentiality would enhance your phone call, feel free to offer a different name and disguise your location. We won't penalize you for that. 888-5-PETER-B is our toll-free number. So tell me a little bit about the process of reclaiming your job, Marianne.
Well, the process, what happened first, you know, it went through it. It took like 6 weeks before they, it actually took about 4 weeks before they even responded to my question. And then it was sign this oath in 2 days or you're fired. And they gave me a little reprieve because I actually found someone who might be able to answer the question. But then they did fire me. So I filed a grievance with the United Auto Workers, which is our union. And then I emailed the paper. And so when it was just the auto workers, they didn't seem like the university was particularly, you know, interested. They weren't, like, responding to the grievance wasn't a high priority.
Mm-hmm.
But by Tuesday, that was on a Wednesday I got fired. The newspaper article was on Friday. And by Tuesday, the university was all into setting up a, you know, setting up a grievance hearing and trying to get me my job back. But I honestly think it was because of a negative public response.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah.
Great. Marianne, we're going to take a break here, and we've got about 4 minutes. If possible, could you call us back from a different phone?
Oh, okay.
Because it's really fuzzy, and it's a little bit hard to understand you.
Oh, okay, sure.
Okay, so we gave you that number, so just give us a call back, and we'll set you up there.
Okay, thanks.
All right, we'll continue in just a moment with our guest, who is Marianne Kearney Brown, a Quaker, who lost her job briefly at Cal State East Bay. She's been reinstated. The issue is a loyalty oath that she modified before signing. And if you have a comment about this or a case you'd like to bring to our attention, we want to hear from you right now at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Raise your right hand and say, I'm listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. So help me God. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Beyond Wheat Artisan Bakery, right here in Monterey, brings you sugar-free and gluten-free muffins and cakes that are all natural, with organic ingredients and loaded with super grain nutrition. Find Beyond Wheat at Whole Foods Market in Monterey and Cornucopia Community Market in Carmel. Be sure to try Beyond Wheat for a truly special treat, created to keep you happy and totally guilt-free. You'll be so glad you did.
Carmel's community bookstore, The Pilgrim's Way, is a locally owned independent bookstore and has been for nearly 40 years.
Discover for yourself our intimate and unique setting, including the secret garden, known locally as a hidden treasure in downtown Carmel. Our friendly staff at Pilgrim's Way are available to assist you with any personal needs or gift buying. And our book selection offers the best of personal development, local interest, bestsellers, novels, children's, and metaphysical, plus much, much more. We have great music and healing tools, cards, and garden statuary.
Visit us at www.pilgrimsway.com or call 624-4955 or visit the Pilgrim's Way Carmel's only bookstore and the Secret Garden on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in Carmel.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Hi, this is Sheila Gale. Listen to my show every Saturday from 3 to 5 p.m. 2 hours of in-depth talk on effective ways to help us get through life's greatest challenges, whatever the crisis. Addictions, illness, fears, breakups, money problems. I'll bring in the expert guests and we'll do it with some humor. The Sheila Show, brought to you by Sun Street Centers. For alcohol and drug treatment, go to www.sunstreetcenters.com.
Checking traffic on KRXA and a problem in Castroville, Merritt Street at Preston Street. Two cars, they've both been cleared off to the right-hand shoulder. CHP is on the scene sorting things out. Up in Felton, East Zianti Road at Wainer Way, it's a solo car crash that's off to the side. This may also involve a lot of police activity, so you will see all that activity off to the shoulder. Interlake and Casterly Road at Hughes Road, we have an injury crash with a pickup truck that overturned and landed in a ditch. Emergency crews definitely on the way. Interlake and Hathaway Avenue at Mark Avenue, a two-car crash. That's partially blocking the roadway. The good news right now, we have no crashes or stalls on any major freeway. 17, 68, Highway 1, they're all open and clear. This is brought to you by Carfax. A flood-damaged car is like a ticking time bomb. Nearly half of these flooded cars get fixed up and resold. Want to avoid them? Ask your dealer for a free Carfax vehicle history report or go to Carfax.com. If you spot a traffic problem out there, give us a call, 415-901-7990. We'd love to hear from you. I'm Nate Nix, and that's traffic on KRXA.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, 21 minutes after the hour. Have you been required to sign a loyalty oath to work at a public school or a government job?
Chase, out into the woods. Put that close behind my back. I never knew how close I stood.
We're talking with Mary Ann Kearney Brown. She's back on the job at California State East Bay teaching math after briefly being dismissed from her job for refusing to sign this loyalty oath that she would support and defend the U.S. and state constitutions against all enemies, foreign and domestic. She wrote nonviolently in front of the word support. She crossed out swear. She circled affirm. And she said she did that to conform with her personal religious beliefs and values. And Mary Ann Kearney Brown, what kind of response did you get from the media and from groups, say, like the ACLU?
The ACLU, before I got fired, they were really intent on making it so I could keep my job. They were telling me about stuff, you know, it doesn't require you to bear arms and all that. But to me, the issue was our freedom of expression and freedom of religion, and I saw no reason why I couldn't write nonviolently. And so once I did get fired, the Chronicle thought it was a really amazing story. That's what she emailed me. We want to hear more about your amazing story, which surprised me. But then the next day, it was in the paper, and it was on the SFGate website, and lots of people were commenting. It was the most emailed story for most of the day on SFGate. It was top local news story, and it really surprised me. And And then my brother, who lives in Massachusetts and is a college administrator out there, called me about 10 o'clock in the morning and said, hey, I heard you lost your job, because people were talking about it back there, and forwarded him the link, and it was me. So.
Well, and it turns out this is fairly widespread. There is a story out of New Jersey about a requirement of a civility code at the Bergen Community College District. It's a five-point agreement, and many people seem to feel that this is a similar kind of oath.
What does it require? What does it ask of you?
You agree to support honesty, integrity, and respect for all, will guide my personal conduct. I will embrace and celebrate differing perspectives intellectually. I will build an inclusive community enriched by diversity. I'm willing to respect and assist those individuals who are less fortunate. I promise my commitment to civic engagement and to serve the needs of the community to the best of my ability. Now, this doesn't require you to, fight or to, support or defend. It seems innocuous in some ways.
Yeah, now that oath, I think, could probably be struck down on constitutional grounds, because there's been cases saying that you can't have an oath that requires action. So that one, if that's requiring you to build community or whatever, that's actually requiring action. And ours supposedly is more symbolic and doesn't require any direct action, and that's why it's been upheld. But what I don't understand is if it is symbolic and it doesn't require anything, why do we do it? What's the point? Especially when Jehovah's Witnesses don't sign oaths. I'm pretty sure Seventh-day Adventists, and there's a lot of Christian groups where they don't sign oaths, and they've been denied employment in the California State University system for that, not because they're not good teachers, not for any other reason, but they don't want to sign an oath.
Well, I choose to be unchurched, Marianne, and I believe that one shouldn't be required to sign any kind of oath like this. I think it's fundamentally un-American.
And that's what I've had atheists come up to me and say the exact same thing, and it kind of bothered me somewhat that this got all kinds of attention because I'm a Quaker, where if I was just someone with strong personal beliefs about morality, I would have got fired and the papers probably wouldn't. I would have been less likely to pick it up, I think.
That's a very interesting point. Donald called from Sacramento. He couldn't hold on the line, but he says he's a teacher, and he didn't have to sign a document like this. I'm not sure which district he works in. Now to Bob in Monterey. Welcome, Bob. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, Peter B., Mary. I wanted to add a little bit of a dimension, but first I see that you mentioned this action oath, and that all of these types of things that I think we're going to be talking about have a requirement of us. And I think the word requirement is something that we could look at further. But I wanted to bring up that in Monterey, I'm aware of leases where you have the city of Monterey and landlords that have a common a commonality in the property that's being rented to the renter, and that there is within the lease a document that has to be signed that basically says you will not say anything bad or do anything that could harm or hurt the reputation of your landlord.
Oh, wow.
So I think these things are just cropping up everywhere, and there's a requirement.
Has that been challenged?
No, not here.
All right,
wow.
Bob, you are officially deputized for those of us here at the Peter B. Collins Show to go challenge that, okay?
Yeah, I think that might be something the ACLU would get behind, because that just sounds nuts.
Okay, Bob,
that's happening everywhere.
Thank you for the call. I appreciate you bringing that to our attention today. Marianne, what do you do when they say the Pledge of Allegiance?
I stand respectfully. And I listen to people say the Pledge of Allegiance.
Good for you.
And I've been doing that. I've been a Quaker for 25 years. I'm 50. And I've been doing that since I was about 11.
Huh?
Just because I remember at 11 hearing the words and thinking, what does this mean? Is this something I believe in and I don't want to I don't want to pledge to a flag. It made no sense to me. So.
Amen. I do the same thing. I don't disrespect those who want to express themselves that way. And I will put my hand over my heart just so I don't look totally out of sync with everybody. But I always refuse to say the words under God. And most of the time, I stand silently and just let it happen.
Now, the one thing is when they sing the national anthem and someone really hits that high note,
yeah.
I cheer. So, yeah.
Marianne, you're a great American, and I'm proud to know you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. That is Marianne Kearney Brown, back on the job at the University of Cal State East Bay, teaching math, and she did it her way, and I'm proud to know her. Larissa Alexandrovna joins us next with an update on Alabama.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
It's time once again to fill in the blanks. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. Yes, fill in the blanks, where I read a story that we've all come to know so well that even ordinary people like you can fill in the
blanks.
Right. Today's subject, client number
9.
Right. And this little episode reminds us once again that there is nothing more important for a politician than to always engage in
safe sex.
Right. The problem is that the warning signs indicating that one might be engaging in unsafe sex can be very
subtle.
Yeah, so subtle that often even highly educated public officials sometimes have no idea they're behaving like
dogs in heat.
So, let's go over the red flags. Red flag number 1. If your sex partner was booked through a website that displays her only from the neck down, it's probably not
safe sex.
Right. If you're planning to pay your sex partner not just for $1,000 an hour, but also for anything she wants from the hotel minibar, it's probably not
safe sex.
If, during foreplay, your sex partner says, quote, "Listen, dude, do you really want the sex?" That's probably not
safe sex.
If you're dealing with a consulting firm whose CEO is named Tamika Rochelle, it's not
safe sex.
If you find yourself in a room naked and the woman with you is A, not your wife, B, not a registered nurse, or C, not a jailer at Abu Ghraib, what you're about to do is not
safe sex.
And so, after sex scandals involving Democrats Elliot Spitzer, Bill Clinton, and James McGreevy, and Republicans Larry Craig, David Vitter, and Mark Foley, we are forced to conclude that the only way to take the sex out of politics would be to
elect a woman.
You said it, not me. Now this.
Computer security threats such as spam, spyware, viruses, and hackers invade your business every day through email, instant messaging, web browsing, and your company's website. With no software to install and no per-user license fees, Barracuda Network Firewalls are easy to set up and affordable. Do what 50,000 other companies have done. Reclaim your network with a Barracuda Network Firewall. For a free evaluation unit, call Barracuda Networks, 888-ANTI-SPAM, 888-ANTI-SPAM, or go online to barracuda.com.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Go ahead. Take a deep breath. Yep, there's nothing like that new car insurance smell.
I love it.
Want to take it for a test drive?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be great if you could test drive car insurance? Well, maybe you can.
Notice all the impressive standard features. Good neighbor service for extra comfort and stability. And look how great it handles around those hairpin turns in your budget.
Check out the company 40 million other drivers trust, State Farm. No one gives more discounts to more drivers, and nobody takes care of you like a State Farm agent.
Who's that?
That's your built-in security system, your very own State Farm agent.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hey there, and who are those guys?
Oh, that's your award-winning claims department.
Wow.
So talk to a State Farm agent today and kick the tires on our car insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
I'm Justin Hamble, your Monterey Bay State Farm agent. Call me today at 831-688-3683. That's 688-3683.
Looking for ways to improve and beautify your landscape with sound environmental practices and enjoy seasonal produce from your own land? Well, Tree of Life Ecological Services offers landscaping and design to suit your specific garden needs, large or small. Contact Tree of Life Ecological Services at treeoflifees.com or call 831-566-EDEN. That's 566-3336.
Hello, this is Jane Fleming with Beyond Wheat Artisan Bakery in Monterey. And if you have a new emerging business like I do, consider advertising on KRXA 540 AM. KRXA is one of the best values on the Central Coast in today's competitive marketplace. Beyond Wheat has seen noticeable and consistent growth since our ads began with KRXA. We are muffins ahead in sales every month thanks to sales manager Larry Rathall. Call Larry at 394-KRXA. That's 394-5792. You'll be so glad you did.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, mild-mannered or not. 33 minutes after the hour, we'll kick off the Free Speech Zone next hour with a pro-Hillary commentary. What, on the Peter B. Collins Show, a pro-Hillary commentary? How can that happen?
I don't like music. You're funny when you're 50.
Somebody I never met, but in a way I know. Didn't think that you could get so much from a picture show. Man dies first, real people ask, what's the deal? This ain't how it's supposed to be. Don't I know average and here? Drinking power, square, pop star, that is hell. No facts are screaming, shouting, monsters came to flush him out. Gangland's laying on the ground, new identity must be found.
And our occasional disclaimer, the bumper music on the Peter B. Collins Show is for the entertainment of Mr. Collins. And if you like it too, that's fabulous. Larissa Alexandrovna joins us. She's managing editor for Investigations for the great website, rawstory.com. One of the key people who's broken the story and brought national attention to the plight of Don Siegelman, the former Democratic governor of Alabama, now serving a seven-year sentence. And it is a complicated web of individuals who've brought all this together. But what they have in common is contacts with Karl Rove, some of them deep and enduring. Larissa, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
How are you doing today?
I'm okay. I'm traveling, so I'm a bit tired.
Yeah? All right. Well, I wanted to get the latest on the Siegelman case. First of all, I've learned recently that the trial transcripts may be available soon, and if so, that would permit him to actually file an appeal, which he's been unable to do.
Correct. Right. And the transcripts were actually not available for about 30 months, if you can believe that.
Well, and that, of course, was just a problem with a court reporter or something like that, right? It wasn't intentional?
Well, it's hard to say because the court reporter passed away. But it wasn't like somebody had to come in and start from scratch. There was already a lot of it done, and certainly there was a lot of the tapes that could have been reused. So it's not like somebody was coming in and starting from scratch. It shouldn't have taken that long.
Mm-hmm. And anything else from the Siegelman camp? I want to get to these unusual U.S. marshals coming in and contacting legislators, but what else has developed in the last week or two?
Well, in the last week or two, with specifically to Siegelman.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Well, as far as I know, nothing. He's still in prison.
The transcript's really the only development there, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, And what's interesting is as soon as the media attention hit, as it did, then suddenly the transcripts are said to be coming down.
Mm-hmm.
It's a miracle. So,
yeah.
But no, as far as I know, nothing has changed in his circumstances. If anything, he's fallen off the radar again because Elliot Spitzer's all over the news.
Yeah, we have gotten Spitzer'd to death, no question about that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a couple of weeks ago when we spoke, we gave out the number of one of the news executives at CBS and encouraged our listeners to contact CBS to encourage them to continue to cover this story. And both you and Scott Horton from Harper's Magazine expressed some hope that 60 Minutes was going to do a follow-up story that might include some of the elements that you have reported on, Larissa, but did not get included in that first 13-minute package on CBS.
Right, and that's and I certainly would encourage people to continue contacting CVS because I do think that there's a lot there that they have and that they would be willing to probably air if they felt that there was an audience for it. Although maybe not in Alabama, if you recall, there was a blackout there during the Siegelman broadcast of the 60 Minutes, or rather the Siegelman portion of the 60 Minutes.
I mean, it was only a 13-minute blackout that began when the Siegelman story started to run and ended when the Siegelman story was over. I don't know why people suspect anything spurious there.
Yeah, no, it's well, the FCC, that's actually a bit of more news, is now looking into this, and Senator Kerry has written a letter asking them to do so as well. So hopefully that will get some attention. But, you know, once the media moves to a sex scandal, then all bets are off in terms of any continued pressure on a serious and important story.
Well, the FCC will give that that investigation a high priority, and we'll get the results in 2012, 2013 maybe.
Right. Right. Well, okay, then I'll be on. Have me back on then, and we'll see.
We're talking with Larissa from RawStory.com. Now, you filed a piece a couple of days ago at the Huffington Post.
Mm-hmm.
And as I read this, I'm just trying to figure this out. So what has occurred is that U.S. Marshals have been dispatched to serve members of the Alabama legislature with subpoenas to appear to testify in a grand jury proceeding. Now, what is this about?
Well, it's a scandal or an alleged scandal involving bribery and embezzlement of money from an educational program. The reality is that the person behind this, Alice Martin, one of the U.S. attorneys who did not get fired because she is a loyal Bushy.
Well, she's one of Carl's girls.
That's right. Well, she's one of Canary's girls.
Canary's girls, okay.
Yeah, Bill Canary. The interesting thing about this is I had heard this weeks ago that this was going to happen. In fact, the way I heard this was through Republican legislatures in Alabama, which is kind of strange since they shouldn't really have access to what the U.S. attorney is doing. So I didn't take it all that seriously until it happened, and suddenly you have nine Democrats being, and this happened while they were in session, which is actually against the law. The U.S. Marshals attempted to serve them while they were in session.
So on the floor of the legislature?
Correct, right. And remember, this isn't people who skipped out on a subpoena. This is just a subpoena that would appear in front of a grand jury.
Right.
Okay, so why suddenly U.S. Marshals were needed and why they needed to do this during the session and on whose authority, it was mind-boggling. But what I found out today is that the Democrats are actually going to file charges against the U.S. Marshals because, they don't have to follow legal orders. But just to go, to show you the level of intimidation, normally people are served in their home or in their office or, why when they were in session? And strangely, the local press was there in advance. Somehow they knew. It's really something that's upsetting me because it reminds me a lot of the whole Soviet system of intimidation,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not familiar with how federal grand jury subpoenas are typically served, but
Right. Go ahead.
Usually, deputy sheriffs are used or process servers who make $15 an hour. So
right.
why were U.S. Marshals required to deliver these subpoenas to the known location of people who were not, at least at this point, suspected of resisting receipt of said subpoenas?
Or even suspected of a crime. Remember, these people, for all we know, may be just testifying as witnesses to something.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? They're not necessarily all of them suspected of something or they haven't skipped out on a subpoena like Karl Rove and Harriet Myers did.
Right.
Right? So, and why do this during a session?
for you can only imagine that it's for dramatic effect.
Exactly. It's for intimidation purposes.
Uh-huh.
And the fact that I had heard this weeks and weeks ago, coming from the Republicans in Alabama, is alarming to me, because how did they know? They shouldn't be aware of what the U.S. attorney is planning on doing.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you agree? And so no one's asking that question. Like, how did the Republicans know when even the people being subpoenaed didn't yet know, or their attorneys didn't yet know?
Right. The example we can cite is that it was clearly out of bounds for Senator Domenici and Congresswoman Wilson to contact David Iglesias, the U.S. attorney in New Mexico, mm-hmm. regarding these politically sensitive cases that they wanted charges brought before the 2006 election. So that's a very clear out of bounds on their part. And it seems similarly here that this is being conducted in an out-of-bounds way.
Well, and it's not only that, you know, in their case, in Domenici's and Wilson's case, where they called and were inquiring about the investigation. This was a few Republican members of the state legislature who were bragging. They weren't calling the U.S. attorney and asking. They were telling people, reporters, including me, this is going to go down. And I said, well, how is it that you know this? You know, so this is why I didn't take it seriously at the time. And, sure enough, when it happened, I was really shocked because, it wasn't even being, it wasn't anything being done in secret. I mean, these guys were bragging about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and as you point out in the HuffPo, posting, state law actually prohibits serving members of the legislature while they are in session, and you cite Section 29(1)-7.
Right. And that's why the Democrats are actually filing charges against the U.S. Marshals. But, you know, what I want to know is where Congress is, our Congress. Why are these two U.S. attorneys who have time and time again been, alleged to have or mixed up in very serious allegations involving jury tampering, witness tampering, intimidation, whatnot. Why is Congress not calling for their resignation or removal?
Well, because Dana Perino would say it's just political theater.
Right, except that the political theater here is the U.S. Marshals being dispatched.
in violation of Alabama law.
Right. That was the political theater.
Right, and this was intended for dramatic purposes. And do you know, did Alabama television stations cover this?
Actually, what's strange is that nobody saw the story here.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's really, in fact, I had gotten calls from people when after they read my piece, and they said, I had no idea. I had no idea that this had happened, you know. And it's, you know, obviously it's not as sexy of a story as Spitzer, no pun intended. but it's certainly in the same kind of genre because, you know, I've been saying this for days. What led them to investigate Spitzer? I'm not entirely yet convinced that the investigation was kosher.
Right.
So you see the same kind of thing happening where they're looking, they might be investigating someone in hopes of finding something, and sure enough, that person stumbles, haha, we've got them. It's just a pattern of serious abuses, and the country's just sleeping through this.
Yeah. On the Spitzer case, I certainly understand the questions that are being raised about the investigative process and how they ended up wiretapping his calls to Hooker Dispatch. But unfortunately, he has given them such a slam dunk case, and now that he has resigned, we will never be able to really find out if this was yet another politically motivated prosecution by the Bush Justice Department.
Well, the problem is that the questions that I've raised, others have raised, you know, Scott Horton has raised, many other people have raised, have not been answered. What prompted this investigation to begin with? How is it that this investigation started a year ago and they only acquired warrants for the wiretaps in February?
Mm-hmm.
How is it that they changed their story, and then the second version is that the bank, Spitzer's Bank, notified the IRS that there was suspicious activity. What's so suspicious about someone taking out money from their own account? Right?
Well, I understand that. In fact, I had a discussion with my friend Peter B., the banker, over dinner on Saturday, and I was complaining about how when I deposit money from my business account into my checking account, that they require two forms of ID, and they send a supervisor over to initial the transaction. I said, I'm putting money in my own account.
And yeah, you're putting money in, you know, and that's where people, that's where I could see questions being raised. But if you're taking out your own money,
right?
How is then, you know, because the apparently the bank was concerned there might be issues of bribery here. But
right.
If you're taking out your own money, how are you being bribed?
Well, these are good questions. We're going to take a break and return. Larissa Alexandrovna is with us. And if you want to call CBS News, Paul Friedman is the Senior Vice President for News at CBS. And the main number there is 212-975-4321. I'll say that again. 212-975-4321. My number is 888-5-Peter-B, and you can call in right now. More with Larissa on the Peter B. Collins Show next.
KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Checking traffic on KRXA. Some better news in Castroville. Merritt Street at Preston Street. A two-car crash. It's been out there since 3:53 this afternoon. At one point had lanes blocked. Everything's off to the side. Tow trucks arrived just moments ago, so that should be out of there pretty quickly here. Interlake and Hathaway Avenue at Mark Avenue. It's a two-car crash, and that's still partially blocking the roadway. Northbound 1 before Del Monte Boulevard. We had an accident with two cars. Everything now cleared off to Surface Street. CHP is on the scene taking a report for Extreme South San Jose. That heads up South 101 before Bailey Avenue, a piece of sheet metal. That's in the third lane from the left. That could cause you problems if you're heading down into Morgan Hill this afternoon. No problems to report as you're making your way through the Santa Cruz Mountains on Highway 17. You will see some heavy traffic south 17 onto South 1. This is brought to you by Carfax. Would you buy a used car if it was damaged in a fire? Fires destroy a car's electrical and safety systems. Find out about prior fire damage. Ask your dealer for a Carfax vehicle history report or go to Carfax.com. I'm Nate Nix, and that's traffic on KRXA.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale here to tell you about Monta Vista Wine and Spirits on Soledad Drive in Monterey. It's family-owned for over 40 years. They have all the best wines. It's the real deal. With a high-end liquor selection, it's all there. And if you have a special request, they'll take care of it for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is open every day 9 to 9. Call ahead. Your order will be waiting for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits, 19 Soledad Drive by Del Monte Center in Monterey. Reminds you to please drink responsibly.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show. Weekdays, 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Yeah. We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 8 minutes in front of the hour, and we're talking with Larissa Alexandrovna from RawStory.com. If you haven't done it yet, you've got to go to RawStory and look up the ongoing series of articles that Larissa and her colleagues have published related to this case of the former governor of Alabama, Don Siegelman, and his conviction on various charges that were driven clearly by politics and friends of Karl Rove in Alabama, including Bill Canary, a political operative who had worked with Rove for over 10 years prior to these events, his wife, who had been appointed a U.S. attorney, and their friend Alice Martin, who was referred to in the last segment as the U.S. attorney, who ordered these U.S. marshals to go serve subpoenas for a grand jury proceeding on members of the Alabama legislature. And, Larissa, were these all Democrats who got the subpoenas, kind of like the way the anthrax went entirely to the Democrats?
Right, exactly. They were all Democrats.
No Republicans had any information about this testimony?
As far as I know, no. I believe all nine were Democrats. There mm-hmm. may have been a token Republican, but I'm not sure.
All right.
I don't think so.
Red in Sacramento has some questions along these lines. Welcome, Red. You're on the air.
Hello, Peter B.
Hi.
Yeah, I had two questions for Larissa. Maybe she has answers, maybe she doesn't. Or actually a question and a comment. My first question is, besides being Democrats, what did these five guys have in common? Were they working on the same legislation? Had they upset the same powers? Had they something doesn't ring right here that these five were selected besides being Democrats? And I'm curious as to whether I haven't read her story, so I don't know. Maybe she knows. Or
all right, let's find out.
Yeah.
Larissa, what do you know?
Well, they're nine, not five. And
nine.
My understanding is that they were working on an education initiative, a sort of a program that is at the heart of this so-called scandal where there's this bribery stuff going on.
Uh-huh. So they did have something in common, and they also had a connection with Seligman?
I'm sorry, with whom?
With Siegelman.
Siegelman, I'm sorry.
No, not necessarily, no. I mean, they're you know,
The other comment I'd like to make, anyway, you know, I think that that's where the story, you know, some of the story might lead, is what connects them that they would be chosen for some particular intimidation. And my comment is
some of them
about
actually
grand jury.
Have been targeted for quite some time
yeah.
separately without this whole educational program thing.
Yeah, it is the educational program,
them,
but
okay.
who's behind it? And then, you know, why these particular nine people, what do they have in common? But my comment then is the connection with a grand jury may be more than intimidation. There is a legal mechanism that comes into play with grand juries, which I'm sure you know, that when you give grand jury testimony, it's secret testimony, and you are forbidden to discuss it outside of the grand jury room. If whoever's concocting this, assuming it is concocted, has something that connects these guys with things they know and wants to keep them silent at least for a time,
Red,
might be a good way to do it.
Okay, Red, hold on. Go ahead, Larissa.
Well, Red, a lot of this could be just dragging people through the mud publicly without having
jury?
Much of a case, but it certainly then damages their prospects for re-election.
Yeah, but it does bring them into a legal process that has certain abilities and conditions. So if there was something, you know, if we thought the worst of our politicians, oh, heavens forbid we should think the worst of our politicians, but if we thought the worst of them, it would be an interesting mechanism to use to shut somebody up for a period of time would be getting them to talk about a subject you didn't want them to talk about in front of a grand jury, and then they would be sworn to secrecy.
Well, that's certainly a possibility.
Yeah.
I mean,
okay, well, I just wanted to know, and
I
assume you'll be following up in the weeks to come to let us know more about what unravels here.
Thank you, Red.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks for your call.
And, Larissa, as you look at this situation, do you think other shoes are going to drop, other brown shirts will be displayed?
Well, I don't know. What I do know, brown shirts. What I do think, however, is that these folks are clearly desperate and panicked to
resort to these types of shenanigans.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, too, we spent an hour on Friday. Brad Friedman helped break a story about Heather Wilson from New Mexico.
Right.
And she's been accused of buying some votes of delegates at a state Republican convention. And
right.
the complainant is a former Republican governor, Dave Cargo, who was on our show. And it suggests that people like Heather Wilson don't learn, even from heavily publicized episodes like the one with Iglesias.
Yeah, well, no, they don't learn. But if they're not held accountable, and apparently no one's going to be held accountable for anything in this administration. Or in this Congress, you know, if they're not held accountable, then why? What should stop them from continuing
right.
their activities?
Yeah, so. Well, and we spent half an hour today about the new ethics legislation that cleared the House yesterday, that essentially will add a new window and a screening panel to ethics complaints that then have to go to the ethics committee itself. So we're not making much progress on that front. Well, Larissa, thank you very much for your report, and stay on the story. Keep us posted.
I will. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And read all about it at rawstory.com. That's Larissa Alexandrovna. Coming up next, Eric Bollert kicks off the Free Speech Zone with a pro-Hillary comment regarding the question on 60 Minutes about whether Obama is a Muslim. That's coming up, and your calls, too, at 888-5-PETER-B, the Peter B. Collins Show. We're talking with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company, which offers more than 60 different wines made with certified organic grapes. Veronique, French wines are intimidating for some American consumers.
Mm-hmm.
How do you help break it down for us?
Don't be intimidated. What is there to be intimidated about? There's nothing too exotic about them. You either like them or you don't like them. You know, it's really simple. You either like Van Gogh or you don't. You either like the Beatles or you don't. You know, wines are really a form of a vibration in a bottle, just like poetry, just like music. And you know the style of music that you like. So maybe you're going to love French wines. And then go for it.
Learn more about the Organic Wine Company on the web at ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. To place an order or ask a question, call 888-ECO-WINE, toll-free. That's 1-888-ECO-WINE. Tell them...
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself. CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney.
I look at my time as governor with a sense of what might have been.
Elliot Spitzer, humbled and humiliated by a prostitution scandal, announced today that he'll step down as governor of New York next Monday, allowing time for an orderly transition.
Over the course of my public life, I have insisted that people, regardless of their position or power, take responsibility for their conduct. I can and will ask no less of myself.
More from CBS News correspondent Byron Pitts.
For many New Yorkers, it was too little, too late.
I really hope he gets what's coming to him, being such a hypocrite.
Professor David Birdsell, Dean of Public Affairs at Baruch College in New York.
This has been one of the hardest, the furthest, and the fastest falls from grace that we've seen in American politics.
As I leave public life.
Political and legal experts made note Spitzer's comments, though long on sincerity, were short on specifics. No mention of alleged liaisons with a high-priced hooker from an international prostitution ring known as the Emperor's Club. No comment on the reported $80,000 he spent for sex the past 10 years.
Last month, Spitzer allegedly had a woman called Kristen come to his Washington hotel room. The New York Times says she's a 22-year-old aspiring singer from New Jersey who goes by the name Ashley Alexandra Dupre, who told the paper she doesn't want to be thought of as a monster. The Environmental Protection Agency says it's tightening clean air standards, but not enough to satisfy some people. CBS News correspondent Dan Raviv has the story.
The head of the EPA, Stephen Johnson, did not agree to set maximum ozone or smog levels as low as his scientific advisors had suggested, but
EPA is meeting the requirement of the Clean Air Act by signing the most stringent standard ever for ozone.
Adding that over 300 counties as of now would be in violation of the new standard. The EPA also rejected pressure from utility companies and local governments that don't want the extra expense of cutting smog. Dan Raviv, CBS News, Washington.
The price of crude oil settled in New York today at $109.92 a barrel. CBS News correspondent Mark Noller has the view from the White House.
On a day when the price of oil reached a new all-time high,
there's no quick fix to a situation that's got us to where we are.
President Bush says the main problem is that demand is greater than the supply of oil and the demand is increasing. Interviewed on the Nightly Business Report on PBS, he couldn't say how high the price of oil and gasoline will go, but that Vice President Cheney will use his visit to Saudi Arabia next week to make another pitch for OPEC to increase oil production. Mark Noller, CBS News, the White House.
Some analysts say the rising price has less to do with supply and demand and more to do with the declining value of the dollar. Stocks declined today. The Dow Industrial is down 46 points to close at 12,110. This is CBS News.
You know, a wise man once said, "Do what you love and you won't have to work a day in your life." Of course, small business owners know that doing what you love sometimes involves doing things you don't love, like the finances. That's why more small business owners turn to Visa Business. It has multiple payment options like credit and debit that are accepted at millions of locations worldwide. And it helps reduce paperwork by tracking your finances. To see more ways Visa can help, go to visa.com/smallbusiness. Business takes Visa.
At Mercedes-Benz, our affordable certified pre-owned vehicles come with the rich legacy of engineering that is Mercedes-Benz. And a 155-point inspection, roadside assistance, and a one-year warranty up to 100,000 miles. Every certified pre-owned Mercedes-Benz retains its integrity because, as a company, we have ours. Stop by your local authorized dealer and ask about the certified pre-owned program by Mercedes-Benz.
See dealer for complete details on warranty and roadside assistance. Abbreviated inspection applicable to vehicles less than 15 months old with less than 18,000 miles.
CBS News correspondent Peter King has an update on the mission of Space Shuttle Endeavour.
Blue Oyster Cult, the wake-up call late this afternoon for the Endeavour crew and Japanese astronaut Takao Doi, is accompanying the first piece of Japan's Kibo lab to the International Space Station.
We are very happy to hear Godzilla. We are ready to go. And we'll have a great time today.
Endeavour's closing in on the station with docking planned for late tonight and the first of five spacewalks tomorrow. Peter King, CBS News.
After an inspection, NASA says Endeavour looks great with no evidence of any significant damage during launch. To encourage healthy eating, the schools in New Haven, Connecticut banned candy sales 5 years ago. Rules are rules. So when an eighth grader was caught buying a bag of Skittles from a classmate, he was suspended, barred from a dinner for honor students, and stripped of his title as class vice president. Michael Sheridan says he didn't realize he was doing something wrong. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Welcome to Chapman's Cheeses.
Yes. What do you recommend today?
Well, there's a special on forgotten expenses and disorganized sales figures. But I highly recommend the lingering invoicing. Very well aged.
Is running your business getting in the way of running your business? That's why millions of businesses rely on QuickBooks software to easily deal with routine chores, like tracking sales, organizing expenses, and creating invoices, so you can get back to what you do best.
This is a cheese shop, isn't it?
Yeah.
QuickBooks. Get back to business. Start today at QuickBooks.com.
That bell means the stock floor is closed for the day. But at Forex.com, you can trade foreign currencies around the clock. At Forex.com, we give you the tools you need to expand your investment portfolio into the OTC foreign exchange market. Go to Forex.com to open your free practice account today and test your trading strategies risk-free. When you're ready, just click and trade 24 hours a day, 5 days a week. When the stock market's closed, Forex.com is open for business. Forex is an over-the-counter market and involves significant risk of loss.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Ooh. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show as we launch into the free speech zone this hour. Our lines are open for you at 888-5-PETER-B. It's toll-free, 888-573-8372. get things started, stimulate some comments here in the Free Speech Zone today. Eric Bowler joins us from Media Matters, their website, mediamatters.org. They monitor the corporate media, and when things go out of bounds, they point it out to us. Great website, and you should take a visit, mediamatters.org. Eric, how are you doing today?
Good, and you, Peter?
Not too bad. Oh, things are going okay. I'm doing a lot better than, say, Elliot Spitzer.
Yeah.
And we're going to let that one slide for now because he has resigned, and we'll just have to see how things go forward. I would like to know more about the circumstances that led to the wiretaps and the investigation in general, but he's pretty well sealed his own fate there. I want to talk with you about the column you posted recently at Media Matters, and let me be really candid and blunt here. I'm a sharp critic of Senator Clinton, and I don't support her as my first choice for president. I certainly, if she is the nominee, will vote for her in the fall, but I have a lot of problems with the way they have conducted the campaign. That said, I'm in general agreement with you about the column you posted that is specifically focused on the 60 Minutes episode where Steve Croft asked Senator Clinton about Barack Obama's religion. And I know that many of my progressive friends and people who, like me, prefer Obama over Clinton see this differently, and I've taken a lot of heat on the air and by email, because, Eric, I didn't see the original broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
And I read a bunch of comments that you kind of show the evolution of the blowback from this particular media event. And so Monday morning, I got a bunch of emails from people who were slamming Hillary, saying that it was a passive-aggressive answer and that she was trying to leave the door open to the scurrilous rumors that are out there that Obama's a Muslim, he went to a madrasa in Indonesia,
right.
And all that sort of crap. And so what I did was I pulled up the clip, and the first time I saw it, I played it live on the air right here. And I have to say that seeing it for the first time, even predisposed to be critical of the senator, I felt she gave a weak answer. But I do not believe, and this is just my interpretation, that it was intentional on her part. And you correctly point out, as you published a transcript of the exchange between Croft and Clinton, that most media outlets clipped a very critical end comment from Hillary Clinton, which is, look, I've been the target of so many ridiculous rumors, I have a great deal of sympathy for anybody who gets, you know, smeared with the kind of rumors that go on all the time. And that has been, I believe, intentionally deleted from the clip that has represented this exchange in soundbite land.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of things going on here, and I think are important, that no matter who you support, because... what I've always done, and Media Matters does in general, but I've been writing about this for years, my point is that I think Democrats need to be treated fairly by the press and with respect. And just because it's Hillary Clinton and a lot of people don't like her now, I don't think people who are in the, you know, progressives and people who are concerned about media treatment should sort of turn a blind eye. But you made an interesting point about watching the clip, because, as I noted, Chris Matthews, after the next day it happened and there was all this chatter, and he said she took the longest time to answer, you know, the simple question whether Obama was a Muslim or not. And as I point out, actually it took her less than 1 second, if you watch the clip, for her to say, of course not. But a lot of people sort of grabbed on to this qualifier that came after the second or third question, which was, as far as I know. But if you watch the clip, you'll see when she says, as far as I know, she has, as I called it, a what the hell are you talking about look on her face.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why do you keep asking me about someone else's personal faith? You know, I've answered this question 3 times now. And after he saw Chris Matthews flip-flopped, and he said, you know, I've seen it. I don't think her response was exceptional at all. I don't think she was trying to mislead people. And, you know, if people want to have that sort of parsing debate, I think that's fair game in politics. I happen to think that no other candidate from either party has their comments parsed as closely as Hillary Clinton. But my real point in the column, which is what you mentioned, is that media outlet after media outlet portrayed her answer as only being, as far as I know. So anyone who read Bob Herbert or watched Andrea Mitchell or read Ryan Lizza in the New York or lots of other places, the picture that they got was Steve Croft kept asking Hillary Clinton, do you think Barack Obama's Muslim? And their portrayal was she refused to answer. And then when she did, she said, well, as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
That bears almost no resemblance whatsoever
to the
exchange that took place.
And
then for people to misrepresent what happened and then to assign the most sinister motivation to something that they have sort of yanked out of context, to me, is really sort of out of bounds.
A caller who called in shortly after I played the clip last Monday, Eric, identified herself as a retired law enforcement person. And she said, you know, lawyers and cops speak in a certain way.
Yeah.
And
politicians.
Yeah. And I do think that that's an interesting explanation for this, for the as far as I know, and the I take him on the basis of what he says, and there isn't any reason to doubt him.
I mean, there's no doubt the language is somewhat stilted. I think Steve Croft got a peculiar response because he kept asking someone a peculiar question.
Well,
essentially badgering someone to give a definitive answer about someone else's religious beliefs.
Now, the thing that I wish Croft had done, because I do think the question is legitimate, at least in the first pass, is to ask if she would denounce and reject. And I'm using those words because she forced Obama to use them about Farrakhan.
Yeah, right.
If she would renounce and reject the language that is in these emails, the whisper campaign that is circulating,
right.
And that to some extent is believed to have been fueled by the Clinton campaign. I don't think that's where it originated,
No. But
we know of at least one case in Iowa
right. Where
an email like that was passed on by a Clinton campaign person.
Right,
and
that
so
person was let go, and I'm sure she issued a statement at the time saying, you know, that's not what her campaign was about. But I agree, if he had asked that straightforward question, I think he would have gotten a straightforward response. But again, I think it's we used to have this debate about whether, you know, people were uncomfortable when journalists pressed politicians about their religious beliefs. Now they're pressing politicians about their opponents' religious beliefs.
Yeah.
And it's I think it's peculiar. And as I point out in my column, Joe Scarborough sort of highlighted, you know, he had David Schuster on his show.
The pimp?
And David Schuster sort of immediately brought it up and was using it as sort of the conventional wisdom that this reflected poorly on Hillary Clinton, and Joe Scarborough said, well, wait a minute here. He says, now, do you think Mika Brzezinski, his co-host, is a Christian? You know, she says she is. Do you think she is? And David Schuster says, well, I think so, I believe so. And he says, well, wait a minute, you believe so? Mika Brzezinski says she's Christian. Do you not believe her? And he says, well, I've never talked to her about it. And he says, to me it doesn't matter. And Joe Scarborough says, oh, so now it doesn't matter if she's Christian. You know, if you badger someone about this peculiar question, you're going to get peculiar answers, and the answers are going to get worse and worse.
Yeah,
which is what Joe Scarborough, I think, was trying to highlight.
Eric Bollert from Media Matters, do you take requests?
Not sure.
Because I think you did a good job on this, and I think it's an important aspect or a little episode. It's an important one to analyze. And without bias or presupposition, I would like to ask you to do the same on the issues related to the allegations that both campaigns sent back-channel messages to the Canadian government that their posturing on NAFTA was just posturing.
Right.
Because I don't know the real story and the sequence of events, but it does appear that both campaigns, in some form, tried to send that signal to Ottawa, yet it was only the Obama campaign that got slammed for it, and it was done right before the Ohio and Texas primaries with very little time to respond.
Right, yeah, the mention that the Clinton camp might have done it, too, was sort of after the fact. And I don't know if that's why the press wasn't interested, because the Ohio vote was over, or if the Obama instance seemed a little more clear-cut. That did seem to be an example where the press could have well, could have applied it to both campaigns.
The story appears to be dead now, and I'd like a thorough investigation.
Yeah.
I'd like to know who said what to whom and when.
Well, maybe if Michigan revotes, it'll come up again.
All right, Eric, thanks a lot for joining us today.
All right, I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, very good. Eric Bollert, MediaMatters.org. All right, we're going to the phones next. You Clinton supporters, tell me what you think of the conversation you just heard. And Obama supporters, do you have any issue with what Eric and I talked about? 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. Your calls are next in the Free Speech Zone on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540. The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey in the old Granary building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
Checking traffic on KRXA and looking good out there. Monterey, Santa Cruz, and Salinas all currently checking in, stalling accident-free. Some debris watch out for South San Jose, South 101 before you get to Bailey Avenue. It's a piece of sheet metal that's in the third lane from the left. Of course, we do have some road work going on. Northbound 1, the Emmeline Avenue off-ramp is shut down. That's in Santa Cruz. That goes on until summer of this year. That may cause some delays. Southbound 17, as you go on to Southbound 1 in Santa Cruz, you will see some heavy traffic, especially as you make your way through that construction zone. Highway 17 through both directions of the Santa Cruz Mountains. We have no stalls and no accidents to tell you about there as well. This is brought to you by your genuine Toyota service department. The Great Corolla Giveaway is on now at your participating Toyota Service Center, where you'll find factory-trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. It's the best way to keep your Toyota a Toyota. If you're out and about and you spot a traffic problem, give us a call, 415-901-7990. I'm Nate Nix, and that's traffic on KRXA.
Yeah.
continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I remain your humble host, Peter B. We're taking your calls toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. Oh, I'm ready. Feeling kind of steady today. There's one line available for you right now, 888-573-8372. And we go to Mike in Sacramento, who's out in front of the Sacramento Bee. Hello, Mike.
Oh.
Hi, Mike. You're live.
Mike Pena here. How you doing?
Good to talk to you, Mike. What's up?
Well, I'm over here at the Sacramento Bee, and we're here protesting of our rights and information that's been put out in the paper last Tuesday.
Uh-huh.
It listed names, numbers, and agencies of state workers. It compromised a lot of safety for folks. Like, for example, like my wife indicated to me, one individual sought this other person, trying to remain anonymous, and when they revealed this in the paper and their website, then this person egregiously came after this person. And, you know, court custody cases, it's all starting to domino. But we were here in protest, and they had the SEIU president, the CSEA president speak to the B, the management, to try to get them to, look at our side of the issue, which is compromising our safety, our privacy, and so forth. But I just wanted to give the introduction, Mr. Collins, and I wanted to give you to Mr. Jim Zamora. He's a senior communications specialist.
Okay.
Stand by.
Our media is being managed here.
Peter?
Jim, how you doing?
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine.
I appreciate you talking with us about this. The issue with it is that we've had more than 500 of our union members, and these are, for the most part, folks that are like, that are not high profile. These are people that are dental assistants, secretaries, librarians, people that work all up and down the state, people that aren't newsworthy. And with this new database that the Bee has presented, people are able to look up and see how much money you're making.
Uh-huh.
And in some cases, they're able to identify exactly what building you work in. Some of the complaints that are really the most creepy for us is that I've had more than 15 phone calls and emails from women who were involved in relationships where they have been a victim of domestic violence, where they have had or currently have a court order against an ex-boyfriend or ex-spouse.
Uh-huh.
And he's now, many of them have moved from one agency to another, but now the ex can find them.
I see.
And
now Jim,
made it a lot easier.
Jim,
and
tell me,
it's a scary thing,
Jim,
and it's endangering a lot of people.
Jim, tell me, do your union contracts prevent the disclosure of this information?
No, it's trumped by state law.
And frankly, it was never
an issue that we saw that we had to fight against, because this issue, this information has been public before.
Mm-hmm.
But it used to be that you had to go and look at. You know, you had to go into a building and look up certain kinds of records.
Right.
Direct marketers could buy this information, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody ever put it on a website, and they put it on in such a way that the only way that you can access the website is to punch in somebody's name. So you have to know someone's name in order to access this.
Okay.
And so all of this, you know, kind of highfalutin stuff about the public good, the public interest, things like that, the bottom line is they've kind of created a tool that gossipers love.
Mm-hmm.
But even more than that, there's a potential consequences involving stalkers and things along of that nature.
Well, Jim, I do understand the issue you're raising. What are you asking for? What would you like the Bee to do?
We would like them to take the names off the web, take the names of our members off of the website. That basically, all, you know, as far as high-end earners and anyone, you know, we don't have department heads in our union, but very high-end earners, possibly leave them alone. But all of the mid-level people, all the secretaries,
so you're saying
sweep the floor, take their names off. They are not news.
What about the Department of Corrections officers who make $200,000 racking up big overtime? Is that not news?
Well, you know, people can argue that in different ways, and their information can come up on databases, and it often does when certain reports come out.
Mm-hmm.
I used to be a news reporter in my previous job, and that kind of information comes out on individual reports, is you can do public records act requests to find out who is making the most overtime.
Mm-hmm.
That's possible. But why do you want to have it so that every single corrections officer in the state of California who guards prisoners, who guards parolees, guards dangerous felons, that somebody can just punch in their name into a computer and look them up and find out how much they make, and that way you can put that out all over the prison yard, how much this guy's making,
mm-hmm.
or if he's your parole agent, you can dog him for that, and then you can start cross-referencing it in other records.
Yeah. Well, Jim, I'm going to have to run here in a second, but I do appreciate the points you're raising.
Okay.
It's very live, and I'm going to drop you because of the noise there. Thank you, Jim. The other thing I'll say is that this points up that publication of information like this in a widespread way and in an uncontrolled way can be very dangerous. And while I'm not quite sure what the remedy is here, because I think it is newsworthy when a prison guard makes $200,000, but I do respect that not every state worker should have detailed information published about where they work and what they make. All that is understandable to me. But think about the way sex offenders who have paid their price, paid for their crimes by serving a sentence and are then released, that information is made available on databases to any member of the public. And it promotes vigilante behavior. It enhances fear in the community and often serves no good purpose. I'm not saying it should be secret or totally off limits, but widespread dissemination of that kind of information can be dangerous and backfire. 888-5 Peter B. Let me know what you think.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. To experience one-of-a-kind dishes, don't forget the weekly specials. The Mexicali Grill is open Monday through Saturday for lunch until 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service has two locations to serve you better wherever you live. Both locations feature full-service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Juan specializes in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for fast, friendly, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service, now located in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive in Aptos Village, across from the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Give Juan a call at 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Don't forget to ask Juan how KRXA listeners can save an additional 10% at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Jim Moore Income Tax in Watsonville has been helping Monterey Bay Area residents with personal income tax preparation for more than 20 years. And this year, Manager Juan Gonzalez is prepared to assist all taxpayers take advantage of tax credits and rebates especially targeted for the eco-minded. The staff of Jim Moore Income Tax specializes in fast, professional income tax preparation at a very reasonable price. Do you have a naughty tax problem? Let Juan Gonzalez and his staff provide the expert assistance you need. Jim Moore Income Tax is located at 30 Alexander Street in downtown Watsonville, just two blocks from the Central Plaza. This year, let Juan Gonzalez show you where the green is for green living taxpayers. Visit Jim Moore Income Tax at 30 Alexander Street in downtown Watsonville. Be sure to take copies of your 2006 tax return and all of your 2007 W-2s and 1099s. Remember Jim Moore Income Tax for all of your tax preparation needs.
At Homescapes Carmel, it's important to us that we appeal to both the senses and the sensibilities of our customers. I'm Thompson Lang, and my brother Beau and I invite you to explore, touch, and discover all the unique items we have at Homescapes in downtown Carmel. For importers like us, nothing beats finding eclectic and worldly things in their native lands and then bringing them home to Carmel by the sea. Homescapes Carmel is on the corner of 7th and Dolores, and as soon as you walk through the doors, you'll share in the thrill of discovery. We have a wide range of furnishings and accessories that exemplify wabi-sabi, celebrating the beauty, functionality, and morality of living green. At Homescapes Carmel, we're dedicated to our customers, to our employees, and to our community. We look forward to working with you to make your home the perfect blend of comfort, beauty, and individuality. Please stop by Homescapes Carmel on 7th and Dolores. We are open 7 days a week from 10 to 6. You can call us at 831-624-6499 or check us out at homescapescarmel.com.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
I remember when I lost my mind.
Actually, I don't remember that.
About that place. Even your emotions have an echo. And so much space. And when you're out there without care, yeah, I was out of touch. But it wasn't because I didn't know enough. I just knew too much.
We're in the free speech zone here on the Peter B. Collins Show, and you can chime in toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. From Capitola, it's Billy Sunshine. Hi, Billy.
Hi, Peter. Did you pick crazy before or after you knew I was up next?
It was random.
Okay, I don't believe it. I'm paranoid.
But I did get tipped off about some phone calls, and I prepared that for you.
Oh, hey, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. I wonder who's going to answer the phone.
Let me just ask you, at your house, does anybody answer the phone at 3 in the morning?
If it rang, I'd answer it, and I'd be afraid that, somebody had died.
Oh, well, I'll just tell you that the nearest phone is 2 rooms away, and I do not answer the phone after I go to sleep or before I get up.
That's just great control on your part. I have the phone right by the bedside, and I'd be a slave to it. I'd have to answer it.
Oh, okay.
So I saw the 60 Minutes thing with Hillary responding to that question,
right.
And I was very troubled by what I saw. Who knows how it was edited or whatever, but I really was disgusting. I'm usually pretty good at reading that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I had two interesting phone calls today. One was with my mother, and the other one was with a big shot in the local Democratic Party around here.
All right.
And they both were frightening. Which one do you want to hear about first?
Mom.
Yeah, first I spoke to my mother. And my mother, you have to know, is actually a smart woman. She's a life master in bridge.
Mm.
But she's not, pays no attention to politics. But in talking to Obama, and I was complaining to her about the way Hillary was behaving, and she said, well, there is some connection to that Muslim thing. And I'm worried about what would happen to Israel if he were elected.
Ooh.
And that's what's going around the not involved Jewish old broad network.
Now, is she living independently, or is this a part of a cabal in a rest home?
No, she has her own apartment.
Uh-huh.
And the only place she goes is to the Bridge Club. But that's, she does have, I guess, one friend who's a Republican under all costs. So anyway, that was the first frightening call.
Well, I'll trade you. Mom is in Ohio, and I called her on Election Day last week, and I said, Mom, how's it going? She said, fine. She said, it's raining miserably, and it's flooding upriver, and it's going to be a mess today. And I said, well, who are you voting for? And she said, Hillary. And then she told me she thought Obama would win Ohio, despite her preference. And when I gently tried to offer her my point of view, as I do on this talk show, she immediately shut me down. She said, Peter, I've been waiting 80-some years to vote for a woman for president, and you're not going to stop me.
It's hard to argue with that attitude.
It is.
It really is. I mean, that by itself is something I just totally respect. And by the way, it's, you know, fair enough to say that perhaps African-Americans feel the same way, which is why they're voting 90-10.
Yeah.
Wait long enough, and people will, you know, behave in that fashion.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So the other call, of course, was with this big shot at the Democratic Party, who is, it turns out, a Hillary supporter.
Mm-hmm.
And his message to me was, you know, we're going to win this any way we can. It doesn't matter. What are you going to do? Vote for McCain? And I kept giving examples of horrible things Hillary might, you know, campaign like. That you know, is there anything that would turn you away? And he said, no. I said, so you're like Bush. It doesn't matter. What happens tomorrow? We're staying in Iraq. And, you know, I kept pushing him. And it became clear that if Barack wins the votes, the states, everything, they're still willing to steal it with the extra delegates. And there's nothing that they won't stoop to. I got to the point where I said, well, what if Hillary said, don't vote for the N-word? Would that, you know, she says, well, what are you going to do? Vote for McCain? It's a problem.
Now, Billy, did I miss something here? Has Al Davis signed on as a consultant to the Clinton campaign?
I mean, this is a guy who's you know, an official.
Just win, baby.
Yeah, amazing. You know, and that's what I said. You know, win dirty, that's okay. And that's okay. They seem like they're under hypnotic command at this point.
Well, and I'm very concerned about the, how can I put it, the tunnel vision of many Clinton supporters, and I don't want to use too broad a brush, but many who've contacted me, either calling in or emailing over the last few weeks, that they are angry, that they feel entitled,
yeah,
that she is next and he's in the way. The Geraldine Ferraro comments are of that piece. And it really is a little bit scary, Billy, because some, and I want to be careful again, some Clinton supporters, I think, have gone into a kind of hardened mode where they believe that a take-no-prisoners approach is appropriate, that it will be effective, and that it's the way to go here because it's a rehearsal for the fall. And I just think that it's totally backwards, that they are alienating many Obama supporters who they will need in the fall if Hillary is successful in somehow wresting away the nomination. And the exit polls in Mississippi showed that last night, that Obama supporters are willing to vote for Hillary, and 7-1 Hillary supporters are not willing to vote for Obama. Now, some of that is Southern redneck good old boy racism. But we've seen other states where white voters have sucked it up and voted for an African-American man. And so I think this is a very dangerous set of currents that are being propelled by the Clinton administration. And they think that, you know, through this effort to offer him the vice presidency and make him look petulant and arrogant, that they are going to solidify their base. But even if it does give them the long shot victory that they are seeking in terms of the nomination, as you point out, it will be dirty, it will be facilitated by superdelegates, and it will alienate large portions of the electorate, and Clinton needs them more than Obama in order to win.
Should we go to Denver?
I'm going to Denver.
You know, I was in Chicago in 68. It was about the most fun I've ever had.
Well,
let's do it.
We have made the initial arrangements to get credentials.
I meant to shut down the convention, not the broadcast.
No, I'm going to broadcast. You can shut it down, and I'll cover you.
There you go.
All right, Billy.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you. I always enjoy talking with that cat. Dan in Sacramento, you're on the Peter B. Collins Show. Welcome.
Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Oh, did you have to say that? I hate it when people say that, and I've been trying to train everybody. I am grateful.
Well,
I am grateful
I'm
that
sorry
you called.
I called in. How's
it
that?
Is
that
it is,
better?
Yes, it is not necessary to thank Mr. Collins for taking your call.
It's just the way I was raised, I guess.
Okay, thanks.
In any case, I just wanted to comment on the protesters, the state employee protesters at Sacramento Bee, and you know, I'm very liberal person. And I have to disagree with these guys on this because, you know what, they work for the state. They're paid by taxpayer dollars. And that's just part of the deal when you go to work for the state, that your information is a matter of public record, whether you get it or not. And basically what they're advocating is less transparency in our government. I understand their argument that there are, a lot of them are low-level employees or classified employees.
Mm-hmm.
But nonetheless, once they start setting up barriers for this class of employee or that class of employee, pretty soon the whole damn thing is going to be vacated. So,
well, if you notice, Jim Zamora didn't have a ready answer about exactly what they want. And he's a former newsman. I remember seeing him on television, who acknowledged that there is a public interest and there is a public right to this information. At the same time, I do respect their point, which is that the unlimited and unconscious distribution of this information can have harmful effects on people who didn't do anything wrong and didn't ask to be in the public spotlight. So I think there could be some balance here. Between the public's right to know and the state employee's right to general privacy. Not total privacy, because you make the point, which is correct, that as public employees, their personnel issues to some extent are public record.
Right. You know, maybe a compromise would be, somebody who does have a restraining order against somebody else, they could be temporarily flagged from the system, or their location not disclosed.
Yeah.
But you know, just to make the blanket statement that their income should not be available for public view, and isn't that what the internet is about? It's supposed to make access to information to people who might not otherwise be able to get that information, have it readily available. And then, you know, unfortunately, if you don't want, there are going to be people out there who are going to gossip, who are going to look up their neighbors' incomes and whatnot, but that's just part of the deal of working for a public entity.
Mm-hmm. All right, and Dan, what do you make of my parallel about the disclosure of information to anyone who asks about the location of registered sex offenders?
Well, I agree with you, actually, too. I think that's really atrocious because, first of all, not to minimize or put them in different classes, but I guess I would say there's different. You could easily say there's different classifications of sex offenders.
Mm-hmm.
And beyond that, though, you're right. If somebody has paid their debt to society, it's just the same as making them tattooing a number on their arm or making them wear a Star of David or a scarlet letter or whatever analogy you want to use. And so I actually agree with you on that. That's a good point.
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate your call today, Dan. And I'll be candid that I recognize the high reoffense rate, recidivism, of sex offenders. And I respect that many people feel that their public safety, their personal safety, the safety of their children is at risk when there is a sex offender living nearby. But we have to balance that with the rights of the registered sex offender and with the risk to the public of dissemination of information that could lead to vigilantism and other illegal responses by people who get emotional, but even in an understandable way, about the information that they are permitted to access. Now we go to Mark in Sacramento. Hello, Mark. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hello, Peter.
Hi.
You're welcome for taking my call.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it was about the Sacramento Bee thing. The SEIU obviously is going to be talking about his people under his organization. But when you start parsing people by organization, by unions, by job classification, then it completely breaks down the whole list, the whole database. When you start taking people out and start putting the cap on salaries and stuff, because you brought up the point about you'd like to know how much people are making, because there's a certain amount of people are making $200,000. Why are they doing that? I'd like to know if a janitor is making $60,000 a year. I mean, we have a $14 billion deficit in this state.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason for that. I'm not saying it's because janitors are making more than they should or anything, but I sure would like to know that I could research that just to make sure that there's not some huge group of state workers that their payment is, their salaries are out of whack. I mean, that could be part of the reason why we have a deficit.
Also, Mark, it shows either a management problem or, and I'm a pro-union guy, but it shows excessive influence by a labor union. Because, for example, the CCPOA, the Prison Guards Union, is very powerful. And we see hundreds of prison guards who rack up huge overtime and make, you know, $100,000 to $200,000 a year. And that is a series of issues. The union's too powerful. The Department of Corrections is ineffective in managing. It shows that they need to hire more guards so that less overtime is required. But then there are issues because the governor won't let them hire more people because he's got a no new taxes pledge. And so it's all part of a big piece. The bottom line is the public deserves access to this information. But I think that the union guys have a point that there should be a balance so that there isn't unnecessary exposure of the private information of individual employees.
Well, one of the things that the BE and, you know, the ombudsman, the public editor, they call him now,
He
did a fantastic job explaining this on Sunday, is that the BE thought about this and they knew that this would be an issue. And they decided to print it anyways because, or at least post the database online, is because you can't, either everybody gets posted or nobody gets posted. You can't start saying, well, there's only newsworthy people. Or, I mean, where do you make that judgment?
Yeah.
Where do you cap the salaries at? Anybody that makes six figures or above? Then, if you start doing that, then you open yourself up to selective or to problems with legality. Then if there is a problem, let's say a stalker does successfully, you know, come up with information and acts on it and causes a problem, and he got it, you know, and you left somebody in and you didn't take somebody out.
Right.
You know, the B opens themselves up to some real problems.
Hey, Mark, I got you. Thanks. Room. Thanks for calling the Peter B. Collins Show.
All right. Go Barack Obama all the way.
Good to talk to you. We're going to take a break and then take more phone calls. That's how it works in the free speech zone on the Peter B. Collins Show.
You're listening to KRXA 540.
Checking traffic on KRXA. A new accident for Hollister eastbound 156 after Union Road. Pickup truck overturned and landed in a field. We're getting reports that there's no injuries at this crash. CHP is working their way down to the scene. For King City, 198 east of Main Street, we have a stall that's blocking one of the lanes. Highway 17 south of Laurel Road, reports of a gas can on its side that's spilling gas in one of the lanes. We don't know which direction of 17 this is in. CHP is still on the way to the scene. 17 itself, though, we have no stalls or accidents. Of course, some heavy traffic southbound 17 as you make your way onto southbound 1 right now. There is that road work, of course, northbound 1. The Emmeline Avenue off-ramp in Santa Cruz shut down till this summer, and that may cause delays. This is brought to you by Carfax. A flood-damaged car is like a ticking time bomb. Nearly half of these flooded cars get fixed up and resold. Want to avoid them? Ask your dealer for a free Carfax vehicle history report or go to Carfax.com. If you spot a traffic problem out there, give us a call, 415-901-7990, and help keep the entire Monterey Bay Area updated on local traffic with KRXA.
Go ahead, take a deep breath. Yep, there's nothing like that new car insurance smell.
I love it.
Want to take it for a test drive?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be great if you could test drive car insurance? Well, maybe you can.
Notice all the impressive standard features. Good neighbor service for extra comfort and stability. And look how great it handles around those hairpin turns in your budget.
Check out the company 40 million other drivers trust, State Farm. No one gives more discounts to more drivers, and nobody takes care of you like a State Farm agent.
Who's that?
That's your built-in security system, your very own State Farm agent.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hey there, and who are those guys?
Oh, that's your award-winning claims department.
Wow.
So talk to a State Farm agent today and kick the tires on our car insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
I'm Justin Hamble, your Monterey Bay State Farm agent. Call me today at 831-688-3683. That's 688-3683.
Hi, this is Ruben Dosal Jr., author of My Dad's Thoughts, Bits and Pieces of Life.
extending to you a personal invitation to attend my reading and book signing at Curves in Hollister, starting at 3 p.m. sharp this Saturday, March 15th. Come and participate with me and other friends and supporters as we celebrate together the possibilities that life, family, and friends offer to us. Please remember the time and place, 3 p.m. this Saturday, March 15th at Curves, just behind the McDonald's at 1715 Airline Highway in Hollister. The easiest way to Curves in Hollister from 101 is to take 156 towards Hollister until you come to Union Road. Make a right on Union Road and follow it for about 4 miles until you come to Airline Highway, also known as Tres Pinos Road. On Tres Pinos Road, make a left and go to stoplight, and you can see McDonald's on the right-hand side, and Curve is right behind it. I look forward to seeing you this Saturday afternoon at 3 p.m. in Hollister for a very special community gathering.
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show, 8 minutes in front of the hour. Tomorrow, we've got activists coming on the program. We'll check in with the gang in Washington that is delivering stop-loss notices to members of Congress, saying they can't go home for the Easter recess until they bring the troops home from Iraq.
Now, baby, just put your loving in my box. Now, baby, wrap it up.
Yeah, I will, but I got a few more minutes. Also on tomorrow's program, progressive Democrat Marcy Winograd returns. She challenged Jane Harman for her congressional seat back in 06. And Marcy is inviting people to come to a protest in Sacramento this Friday morning, protesting the plan to build more prisons in California.
Wrap it up. I'll take it. Wrap it up. I'll take it.
Up next, we got Jake in Eureka. Hello, Jake.
Hey, Peter B., how's it going?
Thank you for calling the program.
Hey, I just saw Geraldine Ferraro interviewed on NBC Nightly News.
Uh-huh.
And it was just pathetic. I mean, you know, Geraldine Ferraro should be told that the first rule when you're in a hole is to stop digging. And she just got out there and said there was nothing wrong with what she said. It wasn't at all divisive. In fact, she accused the Obama campaign of leaking the story to the national press. And Ferraro said that Obama's campaign was playing the race card.
Oh.
And that Obama's campaign should apologize to Geraldine Ferraro for calling her a racist.
Well,
yeah, you know,
I've met Geraldine Ferraro. I like her. I think she's very smart. But she exhibited the same behavior when she got under the gun in the 88 presidential campaign. There she was, the vice presidential nominee. And her husband, John Zaccaro, was implicated in some, bad real estate deals and bad faith dealing and that sort of thing. And she just hunkered down and, to use your expression, she kept digging.
Yeah.
And she made the problem worse. She said, oh, he's being singled out because he's an Italian-American. Remember that?
Yeah, I do remember that, actually. You know, and this is part of the reason probably why her and Walter Mondale lost 49 states. You know, she does not seem to be the most brilliant political mind. And I do like a lot of Geraldine's, you know, politics.
Yeah.
But this statement is just stupid. I mean, what else can you call it? I mean, to basically go out there and say the only reason Barack Obama is about to become the Democratic nominee is because he's a black man who happens to be named Barack Obama. I love Obama's retort.
Well,
you know, he said the path to the presidency in the United States is probably not to be an African-American named Barack Obama. You know, I mean, he's saying that he's not the most likely of candidates. And for Ferraro to insist that it's all about his race is just, you know, it's offensive.
Yeah, it is. And this is a case where I want to turn the tables on Hillary Clinton from a couple of debates back, where she demanded that Barack Obama not only reject but also renounce the support of Minister Farrakhan. And she has said that she doesn't agree with Ferraro on this. And she talked about how we don't like it when sometimes people who support me veer off into the personal. This is not the personal. This is racist. And it is beyond the pale. And I demand that Senator Clinton renounce and reject the support of Geraldine Ferraro, given her comments and given the way she has dug in to defend her bad comments.
Yeah, if Geraldine Ferraro had just simply said, sorry, I made a mistake, I think this would have blown over. But her trying to defend this, going on national TV saying there's nothing wrong with what she said, that's not going to work. And if Hillary's going to say that she she renounces what Geraldine Ferraro said. I think Hillary should also have to renounce Rush Limbaugh's support for the Hillary Clinton campaign. After all, it was Rush Limbaugh who probably gave her her victory in Texas and Ohio.
Well, I do think it was a major factor in Texas. I'm not so sure in Ohio. I don't think that the, when you add it all up, there was substantial cross-party voting, but it didn't all go to Hillary. And so, ultimately, I don't believe that the number of Republicans who voted for Hillary in Ohio put her over the top. I think it was a factor, and I think that we have to subtract that from any expected support that you project for the fall.
Absolutely.
But I just want to be clear that mathematically, I don't believe it's true that the Republicans gave her Ohio.
Okay, but I do think people should remember that those votes that she received, those crossover votes, like you say, she cannot count on those in the general election because those people will end up voting for McCain.
You're right. Jake, thank you very much. Ben and Salinas, he's been quiet, but he's never silent. Hello, Ben.
Hey, Peter Collins.
Yes, sir.
I got alarm bells going off in my head here because I'm feeling more and more that Jeb Bush is going to be initiated as McCain's running mate because that's why they're being so nice and the little tap dance in front of the White House and all that. They're greasing this guy up. He's going to have to accept Jeb Bush, like it or not. Now, here's the problem. Who's going to stop that? And do people realize what a Jeb Bush presidency would mean as far as pardoning all the treason that's gone on, and not to exclude the looting of the Treasury? And if somebody wants to ask Hillary or Obama a significant question to put them in a box whether or not to vote for him, ask them. Why are there 24 FEMA bases finished just sitting there with nobody in them? And if they're in the Senate and they can't tell us what those are for and what they're going to do about them when and if they become presidency, do either one of them deserve to become the protectors of our freedom? Boy, are we in trouble.
Thank you, Ben. You raise a couple interesting points there. We will have to watch the VP selection process that McCain engages in. And gosh, if it's Jeb Bush, run for the border.
Happy trails.
Don't forget their expertise in stealing elections, Ben.
Until we meet again.
Thanks for listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. Catch the podcast on the homepage. There's a link at peterbcollins.com. My thanks to producer Katrina Rill for another great show.
Till then.
We're talking again with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. Veronique, I just gave you a nice little chocolate raspberry treat. Can I drink wine and eat chocolate at the same time? Is there a rule against that? Is there a law in France that says I can't?
No, to the contrary. My girlfriends and I sometimes get together and have a treat of chocolate with one absolutely scrumptious wine that we have, which is called Cartagène, which is, again, something that people make in the south of France, pretty much for the family. It's a treat, and they pull it out when you go visit them. You know how farmers are and people are close to the land, and they pull out the thing that they've made and they've kept in their cellar, and the foie gras and the special sausage and all this, and they sit around and they share this little treat with them. It's like communion.
Find out more about organic wines at ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. Order by phone toll free at 888-ECO-WINE. Mention Peter B. Collins and see what happened.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. A new high for crude oil today. It traded above $110 a barrel in New York before settling at $109.92. And analyst John Kilduff says this isn't the end of it.
Oil prices are going to continue to soar unless and until the dollar turns itself around.
He says there's plenty of supply, but the weak dollar makes oil more expensive. And if the Fed, as expected, cuts interest rates again, the dollar's likely to weaken even further. Gasoline prices can only go higher.
I'm Peter Mayer in Washington. The Energy Department projects average retail gasoline prices will peak near $3.50 a gallon in May and June. But the department leaves the national gas pump nozzle open to hit the $4 level during part of a month, or in some regions, even at some stations. That's already happening in parts of California. The department reports prices hit the highest point in history last week, a $3.23 per gallon average. West Coast averages are hovering close to $3.50 per gallon.
Elliot Spitzer dropped the other shoe today.
I am resigning from the office of governor.
He'll step down next Monday, giving Lieutenant Governor David Patterson time to prepare for his new role. Spitzer apologized to his family and New Yorkers for what he called his private failings.
Over the course of my public life, I have insisted that people regardless of their position or power, take responsibility for their conduct. I can and will ask no less of myself.
Spitzer says he'll try first to heal himself and his family, but CBS News chief legal analyst Andrew Cohen says Spitzer might also be defending himself in a criminal case.
He's a former attorney general, remember. He went to Harvard Law School. He has a brilliant legal mind, and I think that's going to factor in here as he goes forward now and tries to fight against whatever legal jeopardy he's in. He's going to be able to help his lawyers. He's going to have contacts within the court system, and he's going to know the law cold.
As a prosecutor, Spitzer broke up prostitution rings like the one he's accused of patronizing. Southwest Airlines has canceled more than 100 flights so far as it pulls 43 planes out of service for inspection. Those planes were supposed to be checked for metal fatigue some time ago, but Southwest dropped the ball. The FAA is also under fire for failing to follow up. Developments today in the North Carolina.